Hello again, friends. And you are my friends. And welcome to another edition of 605, the Super Podcast, Holiday Edition, Independence Day, Star Wars. I am your host, the great Brian Last. And where's my soundboard? Hold on. This is going to be edit-free, so there can be mistakes.
It's me!
There it is. And we're starting this episode of Star Wars with very popular co-host and contributor to the show, maybe the MVP some weeks of the Super Podcast, none other than Tom Robinson. TR, how are you today? TR, are you there?
Yes, sir.
What the fuck are you doing?
I was trying to remember the words of what I was going to say, and I fucked up. But anyway, that's what Star Wars is all about. Happy Independence Day to everybody.
Happy Independence Day to everyone. It is the 4th. I'm in the midst of a crazy week of shows.
I actually had a song that I was going to come in with my first words, and then I'm doing two things at once, which is a no-no, because this is the best show ever. The best show in the land.
What song were you going to come in with?
And Uncle Sam put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking a fist, and the rhythm roll fly, I forgot the word, and an eagle came on. And
what is this? What song is this?
Till you saw mother, freedom started singing along, and you feel like it's gonna be brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
What song is this, Tom?
It's courtesy of the red, white, and blue by Toby Keith, which used to be like a no-brainer to my lyrical thing, but I realized when I paused that I don't know the words anymore.
Yeah, no, you sound a little bit like a drunk Pennsylvania Neil Diamond.
Well, whatever gets me booked anywhere.
Well, we have a lot to do this week on Star Wars, as I briefly mentioned.
Hold on. Coors Light on the rocks.
No, go ahead. I'm a little jealous. I wish I was drinking right now. I woke up today with a little bit of a sore throat, so I'm a little worried. I get panicked now when I have a sore throat. So I had my wheatgrass and my juice and my vitamins and fucking Airborne and Dayquil. I'm loaded to the teeth on nothing that gives you a good buzz today.
You know what? You've been sick so much since you fucking started Austin Idol Live.
What are you trying to say?
You're supposed to respond, yeah. Whatever juice Vitamix or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the source of your bacterial infections.
Yeah, usually it's nutrients. I agree with you. But listen to my schedule. So I'm right now editing episode 71, which should hopefully be out in the next couple of days. Actually, maybe out pretty quick. We'll see. So I'm editing episode 71. I recorded the drive-through yesterday, which I have to edit to go up later today, so it's ready to go out tomorrow. I have to edit Austin Idol Live, which goes up Monday night at midnight, which would be out Tuesday morning. I record tomorrow afternoon the Bowling Alley, which is up Wednesday and is out every other week. And then, of course, there's Star Wars now, which hopefully, if this all works out correctly, this will be out, what you're hearing right now, Tuesday morning for Independence Day. So I am, what am I doing? 6 shows. And then the experience. I have to record the experience on Tuesday and have that ready for Thursday. So I'm doing 6 shows within just a few days. Feel free to go to the Patreon account and contribute money and nutrients.
I was going to say, good luck with getting to a cookout.
I know, and then we're supposed to barbecue here Tuesday, which I'm not looking forward to. You know what? The last few times I barbecued, I realized that as much as I like the idea of barbecuing, I much rather just cook shit in my kitchen, in my air conditioning.
Right on.
And just go to my couch, as opposed to cook outside in the heat, deal with any bugs if there are bugs. It's hot. The sun's on me. The barbecue gets on my nerves. And then have to sit down outside.
I hate the barbecue too. Like, and I'm not, I'm not that guy that like takes over. But when I do, I'm usually inebriated and I look like fucking Eddie Gilbert getting a fireball thrown at him somehow, and everybody takes over and the food gets cooked the right way. But yeah, I'm not a big barbecue guy either. Outside dining in general, I'm not a fan of.
No, me neither. I like barbecue. I like eating it. I just don't like having to be the one to do it. Because then then I get stressed out too, like, you know, yelling, could someone get me a plate so I can put the fucking hot dogs and hamburgers now that they're done on the plate? Will someone take this kielbasa? Who didn't eat their corn? Like, I start like getting like, I become a little bit of a dictator when it becomes barbecue time. And my buddy Andy, is from Uruguay, and he's like a master of the barbecue, and he loves doing it. And I just need to find a way to get him back to my house so he can commandeer the barbecue and I can kind of just drink some beer and relax.
Yeah. Put an APB out for Andy, man, because, you know, you never know when you see this 47-year-old guy with a big belly in your bushes. It might be me trying to grab a burger. So,
well, you know, luckily there's also a fence, so I think we're okay. But I'll tell you what, Tom, before we get...
Hey, it didn't stop Zabisco from getting to Bruno.
What a creepy story that is. And Bruno wasn't like, there's a stalker. Bruno's like, oh, come here. Sure, I'll train you. You've been hiding in the bushes.
Yeah, I'll fucking train you. Just don't tell anybody about my fucking wig.
You've been watching shirtless Bruno in the bushes, lifting weights. And now you can join me. Take off your shirt.
God, that sounds so gay. Not that there's anything wrong with gay, but, you know, a young boy crawls through the bushes to meet his idol and whatever. No, God bless Bruno. He's the best ever.
I said to Larry, I said, be grateful that you have your own hair. I said, always always take care of it, because some of us have to go to Kowalski's wig doctor.
Did I ever say on air when Zabisco, when I was backstage at the Civic Center, and let me make a blanket statement, and it, you know, includes myself thinking back. I saw Lisa Marie, whatever her name is, Tara Victoria, on Twitter, sitting and watching SmackDown, and she posted The Office didn't let me backstage.
I did see that, yeah.
So sorry to get too contemporary, but she went back a little while. But I thought originally, like, oh, what a dick move by WWE, man. She was, like, there for years, and she was their champ and blah, 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 blah. But after I thought about it, and I've been backstage too, and that's like a business, and that's their job. Like, if you put any other job into context, like, I've been a bus driver for the Transit Authority. There's no ex-bus drivers that just hang in the depot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no reason for, unless they're, like, trying to get a job and it's possible and they've made some kind of contact or whatever, and, you know, it'd be good for you to show up or whatever, see old friends and blah, 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 blah. But just to go backstage, it's... Nothing really goes on back there, and you're not privy to, you know, the booking or anything. You're just kind of standing there. So anyway, I don't think anybody's allowed backstage. That's my new TR rule for 2017. Just people that are working.
The Gurria position. Don't let anyone backstage. Now, I always thought about that. If I had my own promotion.
Holy shit. You pointed out a big hypocritical statement. Good call there. Because I'm starting to act like Gurria, but I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
If I ever had my own promotion, I would actually instill a rule that if you're not booked, you're not allowed backstage. You know, I don't want just fucking people hanging out there hoping to get booked or just hanging out for no reason. If you're not booked and not asked to be there, don't show up because I'll turn you away. But then again, who knows if I'll ever have my own promotion. My favorite story of someone showing up to the place they once worked or for the company they once worked and having an issue is Dwight Gooden, one of my all-time favorite baseball players because I grew up in the 80s, and he's a Met player. Dwight Gooden, when they opened Citi Field, you know, they had various Met legends in attendance, and Dwight Gooden was there, and he was eating in their very expensive, you know, restaurant with, like, you know, C-level food, but A-plus level prices because it's a baseball game, so they're allowed to rate people for how much money they Absolutely. Charge for everything. And he's sitting there, and a bunch of fans are around them like, oh, my God, Doc, it's so good to see you. You should sign the wall. And there's like a big blank wall. It's like a canvas right behind him. And someone gave him a pen and he wrote Dwight Gooden, 1984 Rookie of the Year, 1985 Cy Young, 1986 World Champion Met. And then the Mets flipped out and had someone scrub it off the wall. And the quote in the paper was, "We don't want to encourage graffiti at the stadium." And it's like one of the greatest fucking players in team history. And they called it graffiti.
Doc was lower to the level of Victoria.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
No, but that, I mean, he did take it a little too far with all that. I mean, you know, he was one of the greatest pitchers I've seen. You know, I'm a tiny bit older than you, but, you know, that white powder can mess anybody up.
You put the white powder on your hands so that when you throw the ball, it's not, you know, clammy. The rosin bag.
Yeah, sure. That's what I was referring to.
Well, I'll tell you what. Speaking of baseball.
No. Wait. I'm going to hijack you for a minute because my memory. It was it started with people being backstage, and I was backstage because I was a stooge driver and all that. And NWA came here so much, and I've said this before, but there were split shows that they were so hot. So the Midnight wasn't always around, but I always found a way to be around. And I don't think I told this before, but Larry Zbyszko was in the opening match on purpose because do you remember that TV show that Lyle Alzado had?
Learning the Ropes.
Learning the Ropes. They filmed it in Canada, and Larry was going to make an appearance on it. And he had to catch a flight like at a certain time, but it was very short duration from when he got done his match and everything. He didn't take a shower, and he's like, I can't really do it, Larry, but I can do it when he said something to me. I said, I'll run you down. And he's like, he looked around like, who the fuck is this idiot? And somebody gave me the nod, like, he's cool. So he gets in my car, and I'm thinking we have 15 minutes to get from West Philadelphia to the airport and, you know, get him there. It was pre 9/11 and everything, so it wasn't major checks or anything, but I'm doing about 75 on the bridge and going in and out of people, and I see him like he had the seatbelt on, he's holding on for dear life, but he had told me like, can we, you know, pick it up so I can, because I was driving kind of regular. And then he turns around to me when we get to a light and he goes, can you just slow down? And I'm like, I'm sorry. I thought, I thought this is what you wanted. But so anyway, I made it in time and he caught his flight. But I got to work on my Larry Zbyszko. But I remember him. That was his statement to me. One of the memorable quotes in my Renault Alliance from back in the day. Can you just slow down?
Now that I think about it, I said how Bruno jokingly would have said to Larry, hold on to your hair. I think Larry actually did have a hair replacement. Because I remember he was one of those guys in a commercial once, wasn't he?
Did he do that?
I think it was him, Jimmy Hart, and Chavo Guerrero Jr. I think. I could
Holy
be wrong.
Shit.
I could be wrong.
Anything for a paycheck.
Hey, hold on. Let's add our next person because he has a very limited period of time he can speak to us. So I am dialing him in now. Boom. Add to the call. And it's ringing. Let's see what happens. Is this the Joe Carter fan club?
Yes, it is.
Well, we have the Mitch Williams fan club on the line as well to see what would happen if you guys encountered each other once again. Tom, do you have any idea what's going on?
That's big. No, I was just waiting until I figured out who you were calling. Big Mike.
Yeah, this is the Canada Day Star Wars special, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, Canada, that's all I know.
See, I knew you were going to sing it. Oh, come on, that is basically the only words that matter anyway.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, when I think of the national anthem, there are certain people who sang it better than anyone else. I'm a sucker for Ray Charles singing the national anthem. Who's the best person to sing Oh, Canada?
Man, I couldn't tell you, to be honest.
So that's not a vote for
Robert.
There's
literally so few. Well, there's like so few occasions that you actually hear it. Like you hear it at like a Jays game And that felt the only place I go that I would hear somebody special sing it. But even then, it's not really somebody special. It's just whoever paid for a sponsorship at the game.
Here's the eighth grade class from the local school singing the national anthem.
Exactly.
Dexy's Midnight Runners actually did a great version.
Of O Canada?
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, that humor of Tom Robinson finding its way into the show. Mike, I got to say first before anything, we're recording this on Sunday. You fucking killed it last night. Easily the match of the night. And really loved it. I want to let you know that. I think I've heard nothing but overwhelming compliments about last night's show. Great job.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's when you're in there with somebody like Kenny, it's really easy to have a good match. So,
have you guys known each other a long time? I mean, you're both from Canada, but you're not from the same part of Canada.
So we've known, like, we've been on shows and little tours together here and there, but not like a friendship that's built since we've both been in New Japan.
Do you find that when you're in New Japan, you end up like forming a strong camaraderie with the other foreigners? I mean, you're a foreigner there because you're from Canada and they're all Japanese. You know, you and all the other guys from America and Canada, do you form a good relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. More so like at the shows and stuff. And when we're on tour throughout Japan, it's a little bit different, but you're all staying at the same hotel when you're in Tokyo. And when it's like a longer time in Tokyo, those are the only people you're really hanging around with because everybody else lives in Tokyo. So they're at their own house doing their own thing. So you're going to the gym, you're going to eat, you're hanging out with each other, you know, for weeks on end. So you definitely form a strong relationship with the other foreigners over there.
Do guys still go to Ribera Steakhouse?
Yeah. Like usually sponsors will take us there. So like sponsors are basically, you know, fans that take us out to eat and pay for the meals and stuff. And they're the ones that usually hook up the Ribera jackets. Like I've been taken there quite a few times on my first tour over here. I was given the Ribera jacket, so that was pretty cool.
I got to talk to my sponsor.
My sponsors never take me to steakhouses. They just try to get me to stop drinking.
Hey, Dolph Ramsor, if you're listening, take me to Ribera Steakhouse. I want a jacket.
That was like the hottest item in the 80s. Yeah. If you had that jacket, you were like the coolest wrestling guy ever.
Yeah, it's still, like, I think it's still kind of held in high regard. I know it was something special for me to get it. And then I also got, like, a Ribera pair of Zubas, but all it was like, a San Francisco 49ers pair of Zubas that they put a Ribera Steakhouse logo on it, but it was still pretty cool.
That is fun. I mean, that was the look. It was Zubaz pants with the Ribera Steakhouse jacket, and you're face paint away from being a road warrior.
Yeah, man, that's the plan.
So, I actually
sell. No, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's you.
I was just gonna say they used to. Apparently, the Road Warriors were like the only one they would sell the steak sauce to. And every time I go in, I ask if they want to sell me some steak sauce, and they say no. So I think I'm gonna have to put on the face paint to be able to buy some of that Ribera steak sauce.
Is it really good?
It's delicious.
Really?
That and the corn soup are so good at Ribera. It's ridiculous.
Do you ever go to any of the other places?
Actually,
like Bull Nakano's bar, or I think Kawada has a restaurant now.
So I've been to Kawada's noodle shop, which was like so strange because Kawada is one of my all time favorites. And he's sitting there cooking my meal that I'm about to eat. So that was like kind of weird.
That is weird.
Right in front of you, right?
Yeah. Like it's just a little tiny noodle shop. Like it looks like it's in a residential area. Like you're walking in the streets and then you just go down a set of stairs and then there's the shop and there's like maybe 5 to 8 tables in the place, and then he's just sitting behind the window cooking up your noodles. And he had the best potato salad I've ever eaten, though. So
it's like going to Tori Hanzo's place for a sword and having him prepare you a meal.
Yeah.
I actually have you on in the background, but I paused it because I'm getting sidetracked. I being the connoisseur of cheapness and being broke at time to time, switched from Comcast to RCN, which doesn't carry Access. And it took me till today to get a copy of your match. But I'm about 18 minutes in, and it does look fantastic. Let me ask you something, Mike.
Yeah.
What are your stats as far as height and weight and so forth?
I'm sitting at 262 and I'm 5'10".
You got to be kidding me. You're You look like 6'3" in the ring.
No, definitely not. I wish.
Well, no, but Red Shoes is 5'1". That's what's throwing you off, Tom.
Well, I mean, you look, I mean, you do a lot of, I hate to change, you know, make this goofy, but you do a lot of leg work and deadlifts and shit.
Yeah, I train of a mix of like power lifter and bodybuilder. So all my first lifts are at like bodybuilding technique or powerlifting technique. So I'll start like with my bench or with my squat or with my dead. So then those are super heavy. And then the rest is kind of like a bodybuilder workout following those compound movements.
Gotcha. Like I'm purposely, and I'm inquisitive, but I'm also purposely sucking up because, I had to move somebody, help move a person the last 2 days, and I blew up like I was at the goddamn, what was the WCW thing that the Sarge was in charge of?
The power plant.
Oh, the power plant.
Yeah. I blew up like I was doing, you know, running the ropes for 15 straight minutes, like after I went 3 flights of stairs. I was turning purple and whatnot, but I'm sitting at 6'1", 285, but your body looks a little better than mine. So I was just curious what your height and weight was.
Yeah, I'm not too tall. I was sitting at like almost 280 before, and then I started cutting a little bit. But I'm trying to do it slow so I don't lose any strength.
Hey, you know, I noticed that you trimmed your beard. It's not a long beard anymore. What are the difficulties in wrestling with long facial hair?
There is no difficulties, but there's just too many damn long beards now. So I said, you know what? I might as well shave it up because, like, it seemed like everybody just had a long beard now.
Yeah.
So at first, when I came to New Japan, nobody had a long beard. And then everybody has a long beard, so I figured I might as well shave it now.
Good decision. That's what I did. When everyone grew their hair long, I cut it. And now that everyone has short hair around me, I'm growing my hair long. Got to be like a visual contrarian.
And I personally like the bald thing because my hair grows like Tony Gurria. It just grows up instead of down. And I always shave my head, so I got to pause. But I see that did you shave right before you went on?
A little bit before, like probably the night before I shaved, and then I trimmed it up the morning of. I just use a buzzer over it. Like I don't use the shave, the razor blade.
I ask all the important questions that the wrestling fan listener wants to know.
The shaving the head is not the hard part. The hard part is that if I didn't shave at all, I'd be a goddamn gorilla. So I got to shave from my ankles to my head.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Hey, let me ask you this. Obviously, the match last night with Omega was excellent. And Kenny Omega is really having a phenomenal year. You know, not just 2017, but if you go back a year to G1, he's having a great year. And I don't think anyone is as good as having those explosive outburst in a match as he is right now, but I feel like not enough attention's being put on Okada. You've worked with him. Just how good is Okada?
I think he's easily the best wrestler in the world. Like, he's incredible. There's nobody that he wrestles with that he brings everybody to another level, and he's just tremendous. And to think of the fuck ups that happened stateside with him is just incredible. Like, compared to how he was treated stateside, and now he's one of the biggest stars in the world, is just absurd.
Yeah, something to always remember if TNA ever calls. Remember Okada. That should be the first only thing you ever think of. They found a way to fuck up the best.
That sounds like an album.
Remember Okada?
Yeah.
So what are you doing? You're about to take the bus over to the show?
Yes. Yeah, we're just sitting at Howard Johnson in Fullerton, California. Now we're headed to the convention center in Long Beach.
Does everyone take the bus together?
There's 3 different buses for all the factions.
So it's your own bus and then the 2 other jabroni wrestlers?
No, so it's like New Japan's on one bus. Chaos is on another, and then like LIJ takes a van, and then Bullet Club takes a bus.
Oh, there you go.
Gotcha. You know, it was pretty cool.
Hey, hold on, Tom.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
If you see Jim Ross on the bus, let him know I'm going to kick his ass.
Yeah, there's a...
And if not okay, me, if not me, my dad will gladly all kick right. his ass.
There's a little budding thing that I've been picking up on with TGBL and Jim Ross, but I'm neutral with everything. Unless I had to pick a side, I would always choose 605.
I don't know if you're very neutral, though, because last time we spoke, you threatened Joe Carter.
I did so not I don't know how neutral threaten.
You are on situations.
He actually didn't threaten. He wished he was dead. There's a big difference there.
That's almost threatening. That's almost threatening.
I just said that from the memory crashed, you know, about 1993, and I forget the exact words, but I told you I'd trade you something that was positive on your end if Joe Carter was assassinated. That's a little strong.
You hope for assassination. That's a threat. Like if you were in Canada, if you were like living in Canada, you could have been arrested for that.
I'd have got killed.
Assassination on the president, you know? Yeah.
Who was it? Was it Dave Winfield that got in trouble for the ball hit a bird when he was playing at the Sky Dome?
I don't know. I remember what happened, but I don't recall anybody getting in trouble.
I almost think, and I could be wrong, that he got in trouble because there was some sort of law there that, you know, you couldn't do anything to harm an animal or harm a bird. And it was happenstance that the ball hit the bird, but he got in trouble or was about to get in trouble and people realized.
You should tell Randy Johnson that law.
Oh, he destroyed
it. Oh, yeah, that pitch was crazy.
Have you had a chance to take in any games or what are you watching right now?
You know, so this year I did not. We went to a Jays and Cardinals game. But with me traveling so much and with a young child at home, it's very difficult to make it out to games. And right now I'm very, very angry at the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, what's going on?
Okay, you want to know? Listen to this bullshit, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to be talking about this, but it needs to be said. So they're doing a Legends of Pro Wrestling night. Great. So they're contacting a buddy of mine. Yeah, so they contacted a buddy of mine who then reached out to me. Hey, do you have some contacts for some, you know, old-time wrestlers? Do you have a contact for some guys who can make a wrestling-themed Cardinals design? Who made your championship belts for the company you're running? Hook it all up, right? So then they have the goal to, like, lowball the guy that makes belts. He contacts me, says, this is what they offered, but I'm going to make it because I'm hoping it'll get more press on me and because you asked me to. So there you go. They got a huge deal on that. A guy who does our T-shirts and our belt designs, he designed the belt. He designed everything for them, all this kind of stuff. I got them in contact with people they wanted to bring out. Then we tried to work out saying, hey, can you do something like St. Louis Cardinals and Glory Pro presents Legends of Wrestling Night? And then they send me a package of how much it costs to sponsor a certain night of stuff like that.
What the fuck?
Ugh.
Right?
After you do all the legwork.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Livid.
Yeah, that's really fucked up. You should do it, and they're just like, while you're there, take out Yadier Molina.
I think what happened was the people who I helped out brought it to, like, somebody ahead of them, and that person was just like, oh, this is a chance to get so much money for the organization. It'll look good on me. So I don't think it was the people that I had contact with. I think it was whoever was above them is just an idiot.
Why work with Michael Elgin when we can get the Nasty Boys and Brutus Beefcake and Greg Valentine?
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was promote the shows I'm running. And it just like, hey, Glory Pro and St. Louis Cardinals, you know, bring to you Classic Wrestling Night at the St. Louis Cardinals. Like, that's all it had to be. I wasn't looking for anything else. I didn't want to even hand out flyers.
Yeah.
Just flash our friggin' website on the Tron or something. You know what I mean? And it was just, I thought it was really insulting. Like, I told my wife on the spot, I was like, we're never going to the St. Louis Cardinals game again.
Well, on behalf of the New York Mets, I'd like to welcome you into the fold. I'd like to work on some kind of arrangement.
I mean, I'm still a Jays fan through and through. It's just Cardinals is just down the street from me.
Hey, we could share John Olerud. That's cool. But I want to welcome you.
Hey, that's my guy.
To the Mets. What do you mean that's your guy?
Well, you said you've read my collection of poems.
Oh, that, okay, yeah, that's right. That's right. No one knows what we're talking about when I say that because we were the only people on that chat. But yes, yes.
I got to put over Mike for his work, like, not with the big thing like last night and where you're at today, but you know, just you're like you're a throwback with the flyers and the promotion and the. You know, you said you were outside the WWE show and you ran into a 605er and things like that. And I'd say 99% of the business today would never put the work in like that. So, and I wouldn't. I'm a lazy fat fuck. But I always admire people like that do that. So much love for that Glory Pro. And, you know, I hope it comes to Philly and I can get kicked out backstage or something.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I think that's the problem in this area, or I should say in the St. Louis area as a whole. Like, you know, shows are drawing 150, 200 people. And since we've started in our venue, we've packed it, which was 350. So now we're moving into a bigger venue. And we already have over 500 or 450 tickets sold. So I think just people just don't put in the work, and you need to do that to have a promotion that's going to draw people.
Well, Mike, before we go any further, and I know you don't have a terrible amount of time because you do have to head over to the building in Long Beach for tonight's show, but let the listeners know a little bit about Glory Pro, how they can keep up with what you're doing, how they could potentially purchase any T-shirts or any videos, and exactly what you got going on with Glory Pro.
Yeah, well, we have a good little organization out here in St. Louis. I was feeling that the area was kind of dull with good promotions that focused on not only good wrestling, but good angles and stuff. So we put a lot of good stuff together. You can check us out on Twitter at GloryPro2017. Our website is GloryProWrestling.com. And there's links on both of those to our YouTube pages, which has a bunch of free matches and promos, and a couple video packages that our video guys put together angles for. And they came out tremendously, considering it's just two guys that edit film and don't know too much about wrestling, and they put these together greatly. And t-shirts are up on 1 hour tees. I'm trying to get our own kind of thing going, but it's hard with wrestling with so many people going to that site. And you can follow when our events are. Our DVDs are on Smart Mark Video, and the older shows are being uploaded on the High Spots Network, so hopefully people can check any of that out and grab a t-shirt or check out some of our shows, and hopefully you get on board and enjoy the product.
Absolutely. We encourage everyone to do that. Mike's a part of the Super Podcast family, so everyone should please support his endeavor. What exactly happened where you were handing out the flyers and you saw someone in the 605 shirt?
I was handing out flyers. First, they didn't want to take a flyer, which is fine. I understand. Sometimes you don't want to take a flyer. I go, hey, man, I like this 605 shirt. And he just kind of shrugged me off like, yeah. Like, you know that, like, yeah, yeah, I don't want to hear it. Yeah, instead of, oh, hey, yeah. 605 podcast is cool. It was just like a piss off guy. I don't want to hear it right
what
now.
The fuck.
So I was kind of.
Can I get a composite sketch?
to be fair, maybe there was a lot of people going. He might have just not looked over, and like maybe he didn't follow outside of going to a WWE show. So maybe he didn't know who I was or whatever, which is fine. That's always going to happen. But like I was really complimenting his shirt. I wasn't trying to be a dickhead, and he was quite rude to me.
That is stunning.
You know, you got
to. Yeah, as I said, there's a lot of people. He probably just was like in a rush to get to his car because, you know, there's 20,000 people coming out of
Mike, you're being too nice. Is he in your trunk?
He's definitely not in my trunk.
TGBL, you got to make an official statement to crush this, whoever it is. They probably got a free shirt somehow, the shirt that was Jamie Ward's. And move to St. Louis.
Well, so here's what I think.
You got to crush this guy.
Here's what I think. First of all, he probably didn't know it was Michael Elgin. Second of all, it was a horrible event. And when you come out of a bad wrestling show, you don't want to talk to people. You know, you just want to get the hell out of there as fast as you can. I'm not trying to excuse the behavior. I'm trying to, in my head, I guess, sort of justify why a 605er would behave like this to friend of the show Michael Elgin, future IWGP champion. It makes no sense.
That's right.
So
plus a monster that, I mean, I would just, even if I wasn't interested in what he was saying, I'd be like, yeah, cool, man. Cool. Like, you're kind of a powerful kid, Mike.
Yeah, but hey, as I said, it was busy. If people didn't like the show, there's many reasons why they could have been in a rush to get where they're going.
Are you all caught up with the Super Podcast?
I am.
What's your favorite recent segment or moment on the show?
Well, I, you know, to be honest, and I know it's both of you online, but all the censoring you've had to do of the Great Yarnak has been cracking me up, and not knowing if it's gonna be, you're going to be able to hear it. But anything that's kind of touchy like that, I enjoy hearing. So those have been my favorite for sure.
Yeah, you probably won't.
See,
like
Brian, I told you it was good stuff.
You probably won't like this week's Yarnak. It's not very good at all. We actually just recorded it before we did Star Wars here today, so I we'll see. It was a middle of the
good on paper.
It was a middle of the day Yarnak. It was a middle of the day Yarnak. I think is the best way to put it.
He didn't have any envelopes handy, did he?
No, he didn't.
And he pointed that out again too.
Of course.
Well, who puts,
could just like get.
He's like a modern day Eddie Mansfield.
But all you need is a couple envelopes to just sit by your phone wherever you're going to talk, and then we're good.
Here's the question that hasn't been answered that I asked him this week on the show. Who puts the answer in the envelope? Who's the person doing that?
See, it's not me, but that's a friend of mine, Yarnak, and he doesn't know. He's just the sage and the mystic psychic, so he has no idea, and
fair enough.
Could be anybody.
Fair enough.
When are you going back to Japan?
We leave the 13th of July for the G1 tour.
All right. You ready
so
for that?
So just over, yeah, those are always fun tours.
It has to exhaust you, though. I mean, it just seems like it would really wear you down.
You know, so the first year I did it, it was my first tour ever of Japan, and that's always where I wanted to be, so it wasn't. It didn't even affect me at all, you know what I mean? Because I was just excited to be there. And then last year, I was like, oh, this, you know, this could be a breakout tournament. So it didn't affect me then either. Like, I don't know if it will feel different this tour because I've already been through two or not. But, like, first two, I really didn't feel that way. But I think it was just excitement of, oh, this can really change, like, what's going to happen after the tournament. And the first tournament was like, oh, well, this could get me a job here. So I didn't really affect me in that way. So we'll see what this one comes about.
You always wanted to go to Japan. Were you surprised at how well you got over?
So yes and no. Like, no in the sense of it's where I always want to be, and that's how I formulated what I wanted to be as a wrestler anyway. So I figured they would fit in. And then yes, just because it came so quickly, you know, it was like a few matches and they were already on my side rather than the long, like gradually getting into a position where the fans were accepting of me. So it's a little bit of yes and no, and I don't want to sound, you know, arrogant in that response, but I was such a fan of wrestling from Japan that I kind of knew what I would have to do to fit in.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Are you?
I have a question.
Are you on the bus now? Because I noticed you got a little quieter.
Yeah, I just didn't want to, but everybody else is loud, so I can be a little bit louder anyway. But yeah, I am on the bus.
What was your question?
I have
Tom?
A question.
Yeah.
Were you consciously aware when you power bombed Kenny Omega last night on the apron that was the hardest part of the ring?
Yeah, I've heard it. I've heard it quite often. So I was definitely aware. That was the whole point of it.
Yeah, I just you know, I think that's the most of 2016, 17. That's the most
the way
stated
ring is constructed,
thing.
It definitely, yeah, but the way the ring is constructed, it definitely should be the hardest part.
Absolutely.
Because there's the steel beams that are holding together are very apparent at those sides. So, I mean, I think we're on to something.
Top of the head is the hardest part of the body. Remember the movie Gladiator?
Yeah.
How many knees did you take last night?
Many to count.
Yeah. It was good. I'll tell you, it was, I mean, easily match of the show, but it was great. It was really, really a great match. And it's too bad they're not airing. Who are you working with tonight?
Myself and a War Machine against G.O.D. and Adam Page.
Oh, nice. Very, very cool.
I got bad news, Mike. He's in jail for beating up a porn star.
What?
Who is?
War Machine.
Is that?
Oh, that's the tag team War Machine.
Never mind. Don't.
Tom Robinson humor coming through.
That's me being me.
Wow.
I know.
Let me override my stupid joke. I actually love the War Machine as a tag team. You personally, Mike, and those guys, and Silas Young, you guys remind me of what wrestlers looked like when I grew up and acted like and so forth. Like, I was privileged to have better positions than a lot of fans in my late teens. But if Kevin Sullivan or Stan Hansen or somebody like that was friendly to me on the way to the show, but then they went out that door, I would run like a son of a bitch. And that's the aura you guys give off. So, you know, God bless.
Yeah, thank you. That's like a big thing to me. I grew up watching wrestling. It was way before my time, and that just kind of stuck with me through the year. So even though the style and pacing has changed, and
Uh-oh, we may have lost him. Oh, there he is.
So a big thing of that mixture of the new style and like the old aura is really important to me.
Is
cool, man.
Is Hangman Adam Page aware of Hangman Bruce Poban's?
I don't know. Maybe I'll make him aware of it tonight. How about that?
yeah, that'd be a good idea. Well, listen, I know you have to go, and good luck tonight at the, I guess it would be the Long Beach show. I was trying to think, what exactly do I call it? Is there an actual name? Is it G1 in America?
It's the G1 Special USA.
G1 Special USA. Well, good luck tonight, yeah. And everyone will be watching on Friday when it airs on Access. And that's it. We'll talk to you soon. I know you're leaving on the 13th, you said. We got to figure out when we can get you in the co-host chair. And
sounds good.
We'll be in touch when you finish with these shows in California. But, Mike, good luck tonight. And on behalf of all the listeners of the Super Podcast, all the 605ers, what were we going to say? You going to say something?
Nope.
Oh, I thought you were jumping in. Well, I guess not. But but Mike, good luck tonight. Good luck with everything.
Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it. You guys have a good rest of the Canada Day Star Wars.
Absolutely. And Joe Carr to live forever. That was just, you know.
Okay, good.
Billy
now it can, it, yeah.
Good. What was it like? What was it
now
like
we
for
can
you?
Forget about the last time.
What was it like for you when you would go to WWF shows and Jim Duggan, even though he was in Canada, would chant USA?
You know what? I don't remember him like ever chanting USA on the show.
I've seen tapes.
I don't even remember seeing Jim Duggan on the card when I was here.
Oh, like, okay.
Well, he couldn't see you either because his eyes were focused differently.
But like, so I remember the first show I ever saw was Dusty and Boss Man in a steel cage, and then like other live shows I remember were like Doink the Clown and like Bret Hart on top and like the Smoking Guns and stuff. So like 94, like,
yeah,
like Rikishi when he was the rapper, like those are the shows I really remember until the Attitude Era. Cause there was like a real long stint, like from about 94 to like 96 after Mania that year, there was like no house shows in Canada.
I know you're wrapping it up, Brian, but he just brought up Bart and Billy, and Billy's over there too, right? In Long Beach.
Yes,
that goddamn guy, I'm 47. He's older than me, right, Brian?
I think so. I think he may be 50 or in his 50s.
Talk about looking like $1 million, man.
Right? It's incredible.
Jesus Christ.
Well,
I remember, I'll share a quick story. Do you got a minute, Mike?
Yeah, I do.
Slammiversary. What's that show that, you corrected me on, not Slammiversary, the thing that WCW did, Brian.
Slamboree.
Slamboree. Mick Foley, name drop much. Mick Foley called me, and he brought me in. We met the night before, and we ended up hanging out and drinking with Kurt Hennig and people like that. And
Great story.
I apologize. Dropped the phone. But
what the fuck?
Sorry. That's Star Wars. That's non-editing. But anyway, Kurt was always like, he told me that he was the toughest guy in the business. And, you know, I was with Tommy Young and other people. And Rick Rude was brought up, and he says, the toughest motherfucker in the business besides Kurt Hennig. And Kurt carried that aura with him. And I'm mixing two shows together, so bear with me. But this wasn't Slamboree. This was two times I was with Kurt Hennig.
What are you doing?
I'm drinking on the holiday weekend. But I remember being with Kurt, and he walked in back of the Smoking Guns, Billy and Bart, who were both, and Bart proved that he was like a pretty tough dude. And he just like smacked him in the back of the head, like very stiff. And they turned around and they were like, they just didn't do anything. And he's like, thought so, you fucking pussies. And he just went to the end of the bar and grabbed the shot. But I was like, cause they were a couple inches tall. They're like 6'5" ish as well. Right.
Yeah, they're tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I better stop my stories, Brian, because I'm mixing stories.
I still want to know where you were going. You started with Slamboree, and then you just changed promotions in the middle of the story.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I did bring that up. But
I had a Kurt Hennig story slash the Smoking Guns, but then it all became a mash because my brain's mashed.
What did Mick Foley have to do with any of that?
Yeah, there was a lot of throughout this story.
he's the one who endorsed me to Red Bastien and people like that Ray Stevens and people like that were there that weekend, but. Unfortunately, I started the story with Slamboree, and I ended up thinking that was the same weekend that Kurt slapped those guys in the head. But anyway, tell Billy Gunn he's great.
Okay. I'll do that.
How did Mick endorse you to the legends? Did he say, like, this is Tom? He almost died a few years ago. We all did his benefit show.
Here we go. No, he said, this is my friend Tom. This is Red Bastien. This is my Tom. My friend Tom. This is the more I talk, the worse it gets.
Maybe we should keep going with this story, see how far we can take it.
Yeah, we said
many different parts end up into this.
We said goodbye to Mike 5 minutes ago. This is great.
Mike, are you familiar with Toby Keith's Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue song?
No, yeah, I am.
What?
That is what I had in my head prepared because of the Star Wars and the holiday. And yeah. Brian introduces me, you know, and he put me over, and I'm like normal, but I've had a few. So I start like singing the chorus, and I realize halfway through that I don't know the words. I'm hoping he does some editing for this show.
I want there to be zero editing.
It was like Leslie Nielsen in The Naked Gun and Rico Palazzo.
All right, I'm just going to say I'm a Michael Elgin fan and shut the hell up till I gather myself back together.
What are you going to do on the bus when we hang up?
Eat my protein cookie.
You have a protein cookie? How many grams of protein are in that cookie?
18.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm sure the rest of it's not good for you, but it's just something makes me feel like I'm eating something healthier than it is.
Protein cookie is what Tom used to call that female bodybuilder he used to go down on. His protein cookie.
Or as a friend of mine says, whisker biscuit.
Yeah. Man, all right.
I know I'm doing this too much, but before you go, Mike, I enjoyed our interaction on the hottest chick ever in wrestling. And did you think I came up with a decent top 10?
Yeah, I'd have to, when I looked at it, I had some thoughts on it. So I'd have to look at it again to go into specifics where I think it would go. But it was a pretty good list.
Which list? He had 15 lists.
Yeah, but that was metric. Overall.
Yeah, I understood what you were going for. You had to take the average. Yeah. So out of the five different lists, whoever had the highest ranking in them was number one.
Right, exactly. And yeah, my favorite category is best vagina.
Oh, okay.
Your lists were ridiculous. There were some people who shouldn't have been on any of those lists. Best vagina. I mean,
yeah. If it was up to you, it'd be.
They're all wearing tight clothes, so you can kind of see what you're dealing with if no photos were leaked.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Unfortunately, nowadays there's a lot of photos being leaked.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Best worker on the planet just endorsed my list.
I appreciate it. I appreciated the thought that went into the list.
There was a lot of thought that went into that. That's for sure. Because when Tom put his first list, I was like, oh, there it is. And then like within like a few hours, there were like eight different lists. And then it was like, you know, he did his point system, like Dave Meltzer doing the Observer Awards. You know, 3 points for number one, 2 points for number two. And who was your winner? Who was the hottest woman in wrestling?
By the metrics, which I actually...
yeah.
I actually pushed it off on show friend and co-founder of Fans of 605, Tim Dombrova. He did it for me because he realized I'm a fucking idiot. It was Tori Wilson came out with the best rating, which includes, I don't remember everything, but who looks the best without makeup? If you look at a picture, you'll see I was correct. Best boobs, best vagina, best ass.
Yeah, I think that would be a hard debatable number one.
Yeah, so she was the hottest, and
but the question begs to be asked, if that's who you came up with using your metric system, who would you have said off the top of your head?
Yeah, but you gotta give a curve because I'm a fucking creep. Top of my head, like hottest means I want to jump in bed with her and give her oral and just leave the room like a ring rat.
Yes.
It would probably be Prime Dark Journey.
Wow, I never would have guessed that. Interesting.
You cut out and I did not hear the name and now I'm very upset. What was that?
I said in her prime dark
journey. He said
Rhonda
Singh. Rhonda Singh.
Okay. No, I can agree with that.
Yeah, Dark Journey.
I mean, if Vic Slater dated her, then not obviously the physical attraction, and I like as Brian would say, exotic, so different cultures, races, etc.
Yes,
and yeah. She just seems so like. Hot.
Well, you know, since Dick Slater dated her, that means Terry Funk probably dated someone who looked just like her a couple years before that. The current winner, the correct answer for who's the hottest now is Asuka. And that's that.
I don't know. Listen, there's no disputing that.
Thank you.
You're talking yeah. to a guy who works for New Japan, but I like Asuka.
Spending that much time, it definitely has curved my interest. Let's say that.
There we go. There we go. Well,
I like her too. But she could kick my ass as well.
What was that? Anyone else hear that?
I hear it. It's that damn pain in the ass Elgin on that damn bus.
Oh.
It might be.
Either the bus ran over
something. Dude, I have so much telephone confidence. When I see you, I'm gonna like bow to your knee.
No need for that.
Yeah, when are you working?
Nah,
you're
the best, man.
You have any dates in the Northeast?
Nothing that I can. Nothing really, because like I have to wait for the rest of my schedule for the rest of the year, so I'm only have up until like September. But I'm sure something's going to come up by the end of the year. That's for sure.
You want to work against a fake hangman at the 605 convention?
Gladly.
Okay, bingo. we'll put this together. We'll put this together. Tom, would you like to manage a fake hangman?
As long as I can get sit out powerbomb by Mike.
Well,
let's do it.
I don't want.
I just gave out the finish.
Yeah. really? What kind of show is this going to be?
You're going to get, you're going to take the pin for the fake hangman like back in the day?
No, I just want to be a pain in your ass and then you just kill me because if you don't, I'll eventually do it. no. I've been, obviously since you've been a part of, our extended family, our family, so to speak, Brian's family, I should say. It's Brian's show.
Cousin Mike.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool for a new generation guy to just be so open and just be, like I said, putting the work in and whatnot. And I looked at a lot more of your stuff, and I just it's ass-kissing, but it's not like bullshit ass-kissing. Like, you're fucking great, man. You're fucking great. So I'd love to be a part of anything you did.
I appreciate that a lot. Thank you.
Right on.
That, of course, will be the main event of the show. The undercard will contain Bobby Blaze versus a mime and many other matches that we're currently putting together. Stay tuned for that. But, Mike, I know we said goodbye about 10 minutes ago. and then it continued to devolve this conversation. But we'll say it for real this time. Good luck tonight. And we'll be in touch soon, and you'll be back on the show pretty soon as well.
Awesome. Thank you again, guys. Take care.
All right. Enjoy the
cookie. All right, Mike.
And Michael Elgin has left the call, and now I have to add someone else because he's on standby and he's waiting, and he's messaging me now. Try the number first, so let me copy this number.
Oh, hey, I was just right with my friends. Yeah.
How's it going?
Hello.
Well, Tom doesn't know you're on the line, so you can say hello to Tom.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
The voice sounds familiar, but I want to make sure. Who the hell is this?
Wow. That's really how you treat our guest?
Wow. Man, that hurts.
That's Bobby Blaze.
that is Bobby Blaze.
It's the Bob and Tom show and not the other one that these fucking idiots listen to. The real one. This is Brian Last, the 605 Super Podcast, and they got the real Tom and Bob, by God.
yeah, just so the listeners know, at home know, I can't even speak. We stopped the tape before because Tom had to step away, and as we came back, I added Bobby before Tom came back. So that's what you're hearing going on right now, and actually, Bobby's on the show, and I have to add one more person because he has a very limited schedule, so you guys talk while I add another person.
Bobby Blaze.
Tom, what's up, brother?
I am throwing a few back. We just taped a couple segments for one of the regular episodes, and cool. I'm feeling pretty good. Let me ask you, Bobby, are you a fan of country music?
Please don't do this again.
Older country music. Today's country music, more like to me, is more like 70s pop rock. But
I agree.
I'm really into like some serious old Johnny Cash, George Jones, Merle Haggard, one of my favorites. I've seen him a couple of times, David Allen Cole. So I like some real country. So yes, I am, but I'm more of a classic rock person, but I do know my country just from the geographical area I grew up in, you know.
Well, Mama tried, Bobby Blaze. Mama tried.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just playing, but Merle's, man. God rest everybody you mentioned, but I think it was Merle and Cash and everybody, but I prepared in my mind this entrance when Brian introduced me, and it may have something to do with the Coors Lights, but I think it's just that my brain's warped, and I was going to, because it coincides with the 4th of July, I was going to sing the chorus of Toby Keith's Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. So I started with like two lines, and then I realized I have no idea what the words are. Oh. And if he leaves it in, I don't know if it'll be funny or I'm just going to be destroyed.
Here, I could play it back for you right now. Listen to this, Bobby.
Oh, God.
You forgot a few of the lyrics.
Every one.
Well, you know, the thing is, Tom, and whether you realize it or not, and I'm not trying to work you, dude, you have a lot of talent, man. You really do. And I know I'm putting you over, and I have no problem doing that because it's the truth. But I thought you were seriously going to do the Lee Greenwood, the God Bless USA or whatever it was. You might do it.
Yeah, Proud to Be an American.
But you.
I mean, you named the right title, though. Yeah, God Bless USA.
Yeah, okay. So you was going to sing Courtesy of Red, White, and Blue?
Yeah, actually, you mentioned Waylon, didn't you?
Well, he would be up there for sure. Waylon, Willie, and the boys, sure. But no,
because,
yeah, that would be one of them I should have mentioned, actually.
What I was thinking earlier was Shooter, because he had a song called 4th of July.
Okay.
And I've sung that with cover bands before and whatnot, and they don't know that it's country because he's kind of rockish.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, he does some stuff with Kid Rock even, I think, and someone else. I'm trying to think who else he done some stuff with that's more of a you're talking about Shooter Jennings, a Waylon's son.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, what song did you say it was? I'm drawing a blank on
it's called 4th of July. I don't know where Brian is, but he probably won't let me sing again.
Go for it.
Yeah. And I'll be
what
honest.
What if I met?
I'm not sure. I mean, I know who Shooter Jennings is, but I'm trying to think of that song. I'd have to look it up, to be quite honest with you.
All right. You want me to do it again, Brian?
Yeah. Here's Tom once again singing this song.
But you're going to be my...
The model for Fredericks of Hollywood, but it's kind of nasty. We were wrestling.
Good job, Tom.
You son of a bitch, you.
Go to hell, you son of a bitch, you.
No, you could sing it. You could let Bobby, you could hurt his ears by doing this.
No, that's a challenge.
Are you going to be featuring George Jones on it?
Well, I love George Jones. It's awesome.
They play.
Oh, what
a party!
I hope. See, Blaze is singing. That's the greatest love song of all time. But Brian don't know.
Isn't it though, man? Isn't it though? It's the greatest love song of all time. But you know, I want to hear you sing 4th of July by Shooter Jennings.
Yeah, but If I get into like the second line and I forget the words, it's going to be another. It'll probably be a soundbite eventually of me fucking up words. But I'm going to pretend Brian Last is in my car and he's my girlfriend.
Let's not and say we didn't.
Brian, don't turn open the door. Don't turn away and bend over, please. Keep your hands on your lap and stare straight ahead.
Well, the reason I suggested that as the lead-in, Brian, is because he's singing to whoever's in his car or whatever.
Okay.
So, but I have to say you as in, you know, you.
Okay.
And I'm looking at you with the world in my rear view.
Yeah, exactly. You know this song.
Maybe.
All right. All right, you ready, bro? I'll give it a serious attempt.
Yeah, give it a shot. It took less time to write the song than it has been to get you to sing it. Let's go.
You were pretty as can be, sitting on the front seat back. I forgot again.
Looking at me, telling me you love me.
Baby, baby.
Nice.
And you're happy to be with me on the 4th of July.
All right, this is a fucking...
And I'm looking at you with the world in the rear view, you were pretty as can be, sitting in the front seat looking at me, telling me you love me and you're happy to be with me on the 4th of July. With sad stranglehold on the stereo, couldn't take no more of that rock and roll. So we put on a little George Jones and just sang along. Now I remember because I had the words in front of me.
Today, they placed a wreath upon his grave. Boom, boom, Tom, those white lines get drawn into the sun. Keep on singing, my brother.
No, I'm done, man, because I the words popped up to help me, and I still fucking cracked in my voice, so
you are
it's not the day
a
for singing.
You are nothing but a bottom card jobber.
Are you a sissy?
Well, you were looking at me, Brian, and sitting in the front seat.
Well, this is Independence Day Star Wars, and what a show it is so far.
Well, you did say minimal editing.
I did, and it's going to be no editing, so this is going to be a real adventure.
Oh, you fucking prick.
Oh, you motherfucker.
Tom and Bobby.
But real quick to Bobby, like, you know, I'm a little bit in the tank today, but I heard what you said, and I appreciate it.
Well, I meant it, dude. You have talent, you know. I hope things work out. You get to do something with it, that you continue doing something with it. And that's all we can do, man. We're all chasing a dream. Hell, here I am still chasing one myself. You know, we're all doing it, man. It is show. There's a lot of talent on this show, but yeah, you bring a lot to it. And Brian, you, the podcast lion, and yeah, I'll put you over too, because you know, hey man, what you started now, you know, of course, You just got so much going on the podcast table. So just keep it up, man, because the guys, just for me to even be a small part of this, to as a listener, as a fan, as a friend of the show, and to have the honor of actually being on it, and you know, just keep it up, guys. Hello. Because there's something here. It's catching on. It's catching on, man, like a fucking wildfire, and it's going to keep on growing, man. And I mean that sincerely.
Well, thank you, Bobby. And, of course, everyone can stay tuned this fall for the new show on the Arcadian Vanguard family of podcasts, Swingin' with Bobby, coming this fall.
There you go.
And
that'd
I believe...
Be great.
I'm looking forward to it, man.
I believe we finally have the guest I've been trying to get on the line for a little while on the phone. Guest, are you there?
If I'm the guest, I'm here, yes.
Scott Cornish is now on the line with the rest of the cast of characters here this week.
Oh, boy. I heard the end of that thing about Bobby's swinging podcast. I understand at the first 605 Super Podcast Convention, we're going to try to organize a key party, but keep that quiet for now.
Well, I'll leave that to you guys.
You know, I just heard my fucking hood rat come out and stay out with me for a couple of days, man. Oh, I'm telling you, the swingers thing, I don't even know. It's just the thing about the swingers house here in this small town, and this is straight shoot. Some of these ladies down there, I fucked some of them in high school, so, you know, I have no desire to go down there and fuck them now. So I don't care about my invite. But and that's a straight shoot. But also, then I had this little fucking hood rat just like call me and show up, and what ended up started being a damn day, ended up being a couple of days. And it was just like, I'm like in this fucking alter universe or something. I'm like, how the fuck did I get myself into this shit? But anyway, hey, we're just a swinging, doing our own thing, doing my own thing, doing my own time on planet Earth, and that's yeah. that's just the way it is in my world, man. So yeah, we'll get together and we'll bang rats, we'll watch, join in. Hell, I don't care.
What? Talk to.
What?
Where?
You want to talk
I
about
didn't hear
dick
that
spot?
Either.
And to talk to.
Dick spot. Nobody will sell for mine because it'd be like a inverted turtle spot.
No crossing swords permitted.
Hey, Bobby, do you have any memories of wrestling on the 4th or around Independence Day? Any patriotic shows?
Yes, actually, there was a time. Of course, I got to wrestle on Canada Day up in Canada when I worked way back in the day up in the old Grand Prix territory. But on the 4th of July for about 4 years in a row, I used to go to this. There's a military base up in – it's a naval military base of all things in the middle of West Virginia in a place called Sugar Grove, West Virginia. And one of the promoters I worked for regular, he had a soul show there every 4th of July, and it was great. I mean, you went onto a military base, and it's about, I think, 45 minutes to 60 minutes outside of Washington, D.C. Of course, for me, it's a lot longer driving from Kentucky, but the promoter was always good to me. And they had, you know, a 2 or 3 day weekend type thing, you know, 4th of July weekend thing, but they always done, you know, volleyball and softball. There were 600 people, I think, that lived on that base. And I'd done that, I'm pretty sure, like 4 years in a row. And I got to wrestle, you know, different people each year. And he had a really good show. And they always ended it the last on the 4th of July. Starting around 7 o'clock, a big wrestling show for about 2 hours. And then, of course, ended with fireworks after the whole, and everything was free to all the military families. And so, yeah, that was one of the bigger, you know, things that I've done for years when I was actively wrestling. One of the most recent things was just a couple of years ago here in my hometown. Of course, we had Miss Foley's little boy, Mick Foley, down here, and Jim Cornette and myself down here at a thing called Summer Motion here in my hometown. They had 7 years had wrestling here on the 4th of July. I went to a couple of, mostly as a guest of honor, if you will, whatever. But those are the type of memories I have that are most recent. The first one I ever recall doing was way back in like 1990. We had a Boyd County Fair, which where I live out in Kentucky is Boyd County, and they hadn't had wrestling for years and years and years. And I sold them this little show. We had like 5 little matches, and it was just great on a 4th of July or an afternoon. And it was just, you know, local homegrown talent guys that, you know, we put together a good show for some, about, you know, 500-600 fans and those type things. But on big shows, you know, I'm not talking, you know, your big corporate events or WWEs and WCWs, nothing like that. But as a fan, of course, watching some of those shows, but as a performer or a wrestler, those are the ones that come to mind to me, especially the ones up at that military base. Because I recall going in post the year after 9/11, after 2001, and when they really searched your vehicles really good and all that, your phone dies within about a 50-mile radius. You just don't have any service. And, of course, this is several years ago. But anyway, those military families, to be able to go in their base and perform and give them entertainment on the 4th of July, it's one small way of giving back to the men and women that serve our country, you know. So that's probably some of my greatest memories as far as that goes.
Amen.
Hey, Scott, you have any favorite? Who's your favorite patriotic wrestler of all time?
Let me see. I think only because I know Tom Brandy is under the mask, I'm going to go right for the Patriot.
Brandy. He didn't ask you which Northeast guy sells the most merch.
That guy's going to get a live wire. Who else is on here? Obviously, Tom Robinson. I'm always accused of not putting over Tom Robinson in a huge way when I get on one of these Star Wars calls. So I just want to say it really is an honor. I am humbled to be on a conference call with the former, the great champ, Bobby Blaze, the noted author, the podcast Lion, and, of course, the legendary Tom Robinson.
My well, gosh, actually...
He's like a modern-day Artie Lang.
Actually, Scott, the last line is pretty accurate from what you didn't hear. I think you shouldn't have went out of your way to put me over today because it was quite a strange journey up until this point.
It certainly was. I'm realizing Scott may have the record for the most phones used to be on the Super Podcast, because I think just various connections and Skypes and phone numbers, I think Scott actually has the most variety in, like, you know, in call quality of anyone else who's ever been on the show.
Scott's a serial killer. Scott Bundy.
When the old days, they had a cheap flip phone. I think, Brian, you might have been one of the first people to say that it's so satisfying to destroy an old flip phone and just get it. You can't slam down a phone anymore. But you can destroy the phone in your hands and just move on from there.
Yeah, well.
Speaking of flip phones, do you want to hear an example of 2006 jokes that made me such a national name in stand-up comedy?
Yeah.
Sure.
Brian is like, dude, this sucks. Anyway, I recently bought my girlfriend a phone, and I leave a pause, and then I come back with, yeah, I don't give a shit if she calls me, but it's the easiest way to get a razor near her pussy.
Good job, Tom.
That's what we call a way homer. You get that one on the way home and you laugh.
Well, apparently Mr. Last, with his wealth, never had to buy a razor phone, so he doesn't get it.
No, I never had a razor phone. I don't know what wealth has anything to do with that, but I've never had a razor phone. Hey, Bobby, I'm curious.
Well, they're cheap. They're cheap.
Okay, okay. Bobby, I'm curious, what did you think of Austin Idol Live with Joe Malenko? Because obviously he was one of your trainers. I'm curious to know what you thought of the two episodes with him.
Man, I totally popped. I had seen Austin just a couple weeks before, which was the first time I met him. And I compliment him. What a such a positive guy he is. And I, of course, I listen to the podcast, and you guys are doing a great job with it. But he leaned over, and we, as we spoke, the fans weren't in yet, and he leaned over and he said, because I told him who originally trained me, you know, was Boris Malenko and his Dean and Jody had a small hand in it, you know, and he leaned over and he said, Jody's going to be on the next couple episodes or on the next episode. And I just like looked up and I go, really? And he goes, yeah. And then you had like a week there. And then the following week, of course, was the one that was, I popped big time. And then to have him back on air, I was marking out big time. And seriously, I did have a hood rat here and she was sitting on a couch opposite of me. And I, like, we was watching this weird shit and doing weird shit and all that. But I have my schedule as to what I do during the week and when I listen to my podcast. And I just said, listen, I know these people, you know, I just met Austin Idol, who she probably had no clue who it was, but I was really putting over, you know, Joe Malenko, huge. And the stories they told about Tampa and the old school and just the great Malenko stories, I was in seventh heaven, man. And I really was. And, I'm so glad you had him back because, you know, even he's got such a great sense of humor and timing on his humor. You know, it's one of those things where I really got it when he would answer or say something. He almost would bury himself to get over the joke or get over the angle or the interview. And he'll say something like, you know, like in Japan, talking about sponsors and this and that. He talks about how, you know, I was just kind of a mid-card guy and this and that. You know, that fucking guy, he put the fucking the junior title on him over there in Japan back in like 89. And then like in, I think it's 88, like him and Dean had match of the year, tag match against the Bulldogs and stuff. He underplays his talent so much. And also just to know that I've met Carl Gotch and that he trained. And I used to speak to Jody about Gotch because I was, like I told you before, when I met Gotch, I'm like, Gotch, And he grabbed my hand and, like, broke my fucking arm shaking my hand.
Yeah.
When I first met him, you know, to hear Jody, when I spoke to him in person before, tell those stories, I know how serious he was. And the truth in those stories, I was just marking out big time, is the best way to tell you. And to have someone, you know, you think of your, this no dig towards anyone else, but man, you guys on Austin Auto Show had Terry Funk and Stan Hansen and Ron Fuller and these guys and even Cornette, but you had Jody back, you had him back twice. I think that just speaks volumes for the knowledge of professional wrestling history, of the Florida Championship wrestling history, just wrestling in general, how things used to be. The best way I can describe it is I sit here and I'm marked out, and it's a straight shoot, man. It was a wonderful job done. No kissing up or anything required by me, because it was outstanding interviews and promos that you all did with Jody Malenko.
Well, Simon. Thank you. I was, I'd never spoken to him before, and I was surprised how funny he was. He had great stories. He's a good guy. You know, we've become friendly. And I plan to have him back on that show at some point soon. This week on the show, Ricky Morton's on, and he did the show from, he was in his car in a Cracker Barrel parking lot. So he doesn't actually stay for the whole show. Eventually he has to cut out for one reason or another, but it's another good show, and we have a few other really cool guests coming up. I think, it's a different kind of podcast. Austin's, like you said, he's a very, very positive guy.
Very positive. The health, nutrition stuff's very good. The only thing about this Ricky Morton one coming up, I'm not going to, I hate to question it, but you said a Cracker Barrel parking lot. I'm almost thinking he may have been kayfabing it. It might have been a fucking Waffle House parking lot being Ricky Morton.
It could be. Hey,
Waffle House parking. Waffle houses and wrestlers don't mix.
Yeah. How did how'd that show in West Virginia go, where you were the referee for the main event?
It went great. What an honor to be a part of. Gary Dameron, who was so funny, was Cornette and Otto both. Dameron. But Dameron is not a common name around this area, but I was married to a Dameron for about 13 years, no related to Gary. But anyway, I ribbed him about that, because he invites me up to any show I want to go to, but he does have the Legends show every summer, and now I've got to do it with Ricky and Robert and Tracy and Corny and all these different people through the years. And I do make a couple of his shows, but the match was so easy, because you got Ricky and Robert comes in the ring with Austin Idol. And I go out, I'm in the ring, and then you've got the Bill Eady, the mass superstar, coming out with Brian Crisper and Cornette. And then it's just walk and talk, Bobby, with Ricky and Robert. It was such a fun and easy match to referee, because all I had to do was stay out of people's way and do what I knew to do. The thing was, you know, I did a spot where I didn't expect, and nothing was called other than I knew, you know, turn around at a certain time. And anyway, Brian Crisper, you know, he kind of grabbed my hair, and he was like, and I drew back on him, and I was like jacked up. And Robert Gibson yelled, "Hit him, hit him!" And I'm supposed to be the referee, you know. And Brian Crisper sells like a sissy into the corner for me. And he was the only one he took the bumps, is the point of my story. And then Billy D goes, "Hey, you're having flashbacks, chill out, you know." And so I back away like, "Oh, yeah, I'm the referee. And then again, Brian Crisper's bumping. But then Cornette comes up onto the turnbuckle and grabs me, and it starts poking my chest, you know. And then I start poking his back, and he sells for me, and you know, I just know the times of turnaround and this and that. You know, it's all timing. It's all just, it was great. But anyway, believe it or not, the finish, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, I turn around for some reason. I don't know what happened. I got hit in the eye. I couldn't see very well out of my good eye. And anyway, I turn around. There's Ricky Morton, Pinnabine, and Christopher. 1, 2, 3, Rock and Roll Express win. Place goes nuts. They have a good crowd. Everyone's happy and all that. But I was so sore, and I didn't take any bumps, you know. But Brian and Chris were bouncing and taking the bumps in the ring, because I don't think anyone else took any bumps either. I know Robert Gibson didn't. I know Bill Eadie didn't. Ricky Morton may have taken one or two. I don't know. I know I didn't. Brian and Chris took them. But I was so damn sore just in the bodies in that ring going up and down and up and down. I was like, damn, I'm so far out of ring shape. It's ain't funny because it just beat the hell out of me refereeing, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Idol come in. He checked on my eye. He was like, Bobby, you okay? And I was like, Austin, he got me in my good eye. and I'm selling. And it's just a really fun. To me, from the beginning to the end, I kept seeing people come in our locker room. Me and Ricky walked by each other. Robert and I walked by each other. I spoke to Bill. Like I said, I spoke to Idol. Always a pleasure to see Jimmy. You know, I love that. I'm a Cornette guy. So, but you know, when it's all said and done, very little was said, but there was a whole lot of fucking stuff done that turned out to be a really, really good match with everyone in a ring knowing how to work without saying a whole lot and basically getting over a match that needed to be get, that was for a legend show. And, like I said, the best thing I can say is very little was said and a whole lot was done. And it was very fucking, it wasn't sports entertainment. It was professional wrestling. And when I turned around, there was Brian Christopher on his back. 1, 2, 3, Rock and Roll Express. I dared them motherfuckers to ever get over because there they were getting over again. In Cornette's pre-interview, promo rather, not interview, his pre-promo, he just killed those people from West Virginia about being coal miners and toothless and incestuous and just, he buried everyone in a fucking building and they loved them for it. They loved to hate them for it, you know. And when you got those guys to work with, my job was just to get in there and, I was just another person involved in a match because the focus was on those guys are all fucking legends, you know, especially with most recently with Ricky Robert being in a rock, in a Hall of Fame, you know. So it's just so easy and so fun that I wish I could do it every weekend or every day of the night. But, you know, my body, there's no way because that one night took me like 4 nights to recover from. Just Brian Christopher's fucking bumps, but he bumped his ass off for Ricky Robert.
I heard some interesting things about Brian Christopher from that night.
Revolving around his teeth by chance?
Yeah, about his teeth. What can you tell us?
Man, first of all, I'm like one stall over from where he's at. And I hear this guy going fucking nuts. And he comes through. He's like, my fucking teeth. I knocked my teeth out. He's pointing to his mouth. And I'm thinking, maybe he's just working a couple guys, you know. Maybe this is part of his gig or whatever. And, I mean, he went from one mood to another very quickly. And I'm looking and I'm like, holy shit, dude, his front teeth are missing. And I'm thinking, you know, is this a work? Is this a rib or what? And Tony Atlas is sitting there. He don't move. Bill Eadie's on the other side of me. He's sitting there. They don't move. I'm thinking, well, maybe it's something he's done, you know, night before or a couple of times on the road or something. This is just a gig, you know. And I look at him, and I make eye contact, and I'm looking at him like, this fucking guy's going nuts, man. He's losing his shit for real. And I'm like, well, fuck, this ain't a rib, you know. I'm like, did you look down and, you know, there's a place where you dry off if you're stepping to a shower. There's some like wooden planks there that you would dry off on. I'm like, can you move back? Can you guys look over there around there and just see? And once they all turn her back and a couple guys start like bending over and start looking around his chair in the area, I fucking leave the locker room. But I'm like, man, I ain't going to be around this crazy shit. Cause if something goes on, I'm a for real kind of guy, man, you know? And I was just like, I had already spoken to him 2 or 3 times earlier. Everything was cool, but I'm like, this guy's going off. I won't be around because I'll fucking go off. And that's a straight shoot, man. That's just me. Because I'm thinking, I don't know if he's ribbing me or ribbing the boys in locker room or if he really fucking knocked his teeth out, you know? So I didn't even realize at the time Cornette had already slipped by me. He was out of there. And I waited the additional 30 to 60 seconds of like, you know, is this guy ribbing or is this a shoot? So when I fucking thought, man, if this guy goes off, wrong place, wrong time, dude, because I don't play this shit anymore, you know. I ain't any of your ribs. So I fucking leave, and I walk out, and then, I don't know, he comes outside, he's cussing, blah, blah, blah. And finally, someone finds his teeth laying over by the chair. But apparently, he had ripped the rip open. Some bandanas that he had in a package. When he did, he put them in his mouth, I guess, and like jerked it. He jerked his two fucking front teeth out. And I'm like, you know, that he calmed down a little bit. And of course, I heard some things. I don't know what Jimmy's told you, or Austin told you, or anything like that. But I guess there's a little bit of heat there between them two at one point, between Brian and Austin. And you know, I'm just there to fucking work, get my paycheck, and have fun, honestly. But come to find out, dude, he actually had pulled, I guess, his two front teeth out. I got a picture of it. Someone took, you know, of all of us standing there in the locker room. He's up front, smiling with two teeth missing. He finally calms down enough because we're like up next for the main event, and I go to the ring, and they had already worked out a little deal where I guess we come over and sold fried on idle hit him. He walked around showing his teeth, and Cordell was like, "You knocked this man's teeth out," and you know. But yeah, it was a little crazy to say the least as to what happened. But overall, on a scale of 1 to 100, I give it a fucking 99.9 because other than that little bit of locker room drama, because that was a shoot. He actually legitimately pulled his fucking front teeth out for whatever reason. I don't know. But I thought it would work, but it was a straight shoot. I got out there. Some other guys helped him. And once we get to the ring, it was 100% let's have fun, let's work. And everyone worked, and everyone went home happy. So I'm sure next day, I guess, he went to the next town or whatever before he went back to Memphis to get his teeth fixed. I don't know. But it was, I don't know what Cornette told you, but that's about my version. Is I walked outside and I saw Corny, and I said, man, because I didn't realize he had walked by me until he walked by me. And I said, man, if you'd have fucking seen how nuts he went in there, he turned around and looked at me, because I did. I was like, okay. And I realized, oh, yeah, we passed each other, you know. So, yeah. But, you know, what a pleasure to see Jimmy again and be around him. Each time I get to work with someone like that. And Rick and Robert, the first thing he said when he hit the ring, because he came in first, he said, I dare us to get over. And because they were so over so much, it was just, you know, it's just to me to be in a ring with those guys I worked with for the 5 or 6 years of my career, to see regular every weekend or every, you know, 3 or 4 days a week in a room with one or the other or both at times, it just depended. And do other things, have fun with. But, yeah, overall to me, it was a great experience because, you know, I don't do those things often, but when I do, I make sure it's worth my while because I'm in a position, just like Jody Malenko. He didn't come right out and say it, but he's so successful in his personal life. And Dean told me this years ago, and this is where I'm at now, is I don't let the wrestling business use me anymore. I use the wrestling business, and I'm not in the wrestling business. I'm in the Bobby Blaze business. So I know I'm post 50. I know I'm old, beat up, and you know, I know I can offer more to this business and give to this business, but I'm only going to offer and give when it gives and offers me something. And I don't mean that as a conceited, cocky prick or an asshole attitude. It's just that I gave every fucking thing I had to this business, and now I'm only going to do, I'm not going to let the business work me. I'm working the business. So when I have the opportunity to go to a show like that and be involved in that way, when it's all professionals and legitimate legends and Hall of Famers and people I respect and a promoter that takes care of me, that's when I will show up. That's just my deal. Just like this show.
Right on.
To this show here, to me, and thank you for that, but this show here, to me, I love this show sincerely. I do listen to the Austin Idol show, the Jim Cornette show. I listen to the Booking the Territory. I put those guys over. But those are things that I like and I love. And, you know, I'm not going to watch Monday Night fucking Raw. because to me, that's not for me. What's for me are these podcasts that I enjoy listening to or being a part of. And I'm going to only, you know, I know it may sound cocky or conceited or arrogant or whatever. Fuck it. I gave a large part of my life to this business. And I'm not seeking anything in revenge or seeking anything hatefulness or pissed off or anything like that. I'm just saying this business is not going to use me anymore. I'm going to use this fucking business.
That's a good philosophy.
That's the way it should be, Bobby.
Hey, I'll tell you what, guys, before we go any further, I have someone I want to add who only literally has less than 5 minutes probably. He could be on the air, but I want him to be able to get in on this. So hold on 1 second. Let me add him right now. Boom. Boom. And I don't know if he knows that we're recording as we call him, but we'll find out rather quickly here. It is ringing.
Phone is protected by Nomo Robo. To prove you're not a robocaller, please enter the number
69.
Again, okay. Please enter the number
69.
I just did. Hello? I guess he's not there. Well, that
well I'll talk to. I'll talk. You got him?
That didn't work. Scott, are you there? You haven't said anything.
That's right. As it was with Bobby Blaze's match, not much was said. Yeah, I'm still here.
Well, I wanted to mention that that teeth thing, he changed his gimmick to Grandmaster DK. Anyway, rim shot. But that sounded like a great show, Bobby, and a great explanation. And you've actually inspired me through social media and meeting through this. So I have to thank Brian about that statement that you make. You're not in the wrestling business. You're in the Bobby Blaze business. And I think a savvy guy like Brian, and maybe even Scott too. I don't know Scott's business background, but you guys have actually, you know, inspired me to start investing in myself or what have you. So. Thank you, but I want to make a real quick point about what you were talking about Jody Simon and the Austin Idol live. I found out as well that he's very funny, especially, and he's edgy, and he's I'll just bring it up. He brought up a Von Erich joke, which you know I have a dark sense of humor, and I've always heard that Dean Malenko, his brother. If he acted much like Brad Armstrong, if he acted the way he did off camera, on camera, he'd be the biggest star in the business. So, Brian and Idol didn't have Dean yet. I think that's probably a possibility when they had, Jody, but, he surprised me with his personality and his range and I like the way he talked about the snake pit, and you know, because I blew up this past weekend like bad. I was helping somebody move, and it was the first time I blew up that bad probably in my life. And anybody, a newborn could have hit me, and I would have fell. My legs were rubber and everything.
All right, and I'm adding our person now, just to let everyone know.
Okay. Okay, I'll finish that later.
Yeah, I want to add on to that, too.
Do you know?
Hello?
Hey, what's up, Brian?
Hey, what's going on, Bob? Bob, you're on the line with Tom Robinson, Scott Cornish, and Bobby Blaze.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Guys, say hello to Bob Barnett, attorney.
We're at the swingers place in Kentucky, Bob.
are there any women swinging there?
Can I get you a hood rat?
Bob, are you going to the show in Long Beach?
No. Couldn't get tickets.
Really? Wow.
I think it was I got in about an hour after they went on sale and it was nothing.
You know, I dare them to put some bleachers up. Everything was just floor seating.
Well, they're in a lousy part of the building. It was real stupid. They could have gone into a building about 3 miles away and with 5,500 and better sight lines. And I don't know why they didn't do it.
How much were the prices of the tickets, if you don't mind me asking?
I think they were $150 for front.
Damn, that's a nice house.
They probably did a $300,000 house without gimmicks yesterday.
And the gimmicks, apparently, the gimmick line, I heard from someone during the second half of the show that there were people online for gimmicks the entire show. Not like the line was always big, but there were people still waiting online from before the show started that hadn't gotten to the front of the line. I don't know how true that is, but that's
everybody there obviously bought T-shirts. It was ridiculous. It looked like every new T-shirt they brought over just sold.
It is a little ridiculous in my eyes buying a Bullet Club T-shirt now just because it is kind of lame. You know, it's not like it was 4 years ago, whenever the Bullet Club first started.
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't a brain surgery convention yesterday. some of that audience looked like they should, you know, I have to be walked home. But I think the next time they come, I'll probably go into a bigger arena.
I got to get you back on the show more often, Bob.
They had to be walked home.
Yeah.
That's a great quote.
That is.
I have a quick snippet about the Bullet Club thing. I went to Ring of Honor in Philly to ECW Arena a couple years ago, and it was a convention / house. I don't know what it was, but I grabbed a Bullet Club T-shirt just because I like wearing black because I'm a fat pig now. So I end up hanging out with this girl. We don't have time to go into details, but we go out and we do the nasty, and she puts the shirt on, and I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know, cover your boobs or whatever. And she said, no, I love this shirt. And I'm like, well, can you just give me it back? And I fell asleep, and we woke up, and she was wearing it with her jeans in the morning. And she goes, oh, you can wear mine. You can have anything of mine and blah, 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 blah. Long story short, this non-wrestling chick that I banged for like 2 weeks never gave me back my Bullet Club shirt.
Just like a fucking hood rat would.
You got to send a letter to New Japan.
Was her last name Reno?
No, but she had a watermark on her upper stomach.
Bob, you been up to anything? Anything going on?
No, I've just been swimming. Weather's great out here, so I've been waiting for you, and then I'm going to hit the pool.
All right. Sounds good. I must mention this. You know, Leno is no longer in our top 10 on the show just because his constant refusal to come on the air, his constant saying that he thought Bob Barnett was going to ambush him on the air, and then sending me things with these legal disclaimers that he would write himself. I said, okay, enough of this. But I did hear from someone who was around him at Cauliflower Alley, and they had known him in the past. And they're also someone who's been around a lot of people who have been sick at different times. And they told me they were 100% certain that whatever illnesses that he says he has, he's making up. And I feel like,
oh, absolutely,
now's the time to say that since Bob is on the air.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he had cancer, and all of a sudden it just went away. It just wasn't there anymore. He's using that as a real good excuse.
What, is he fucking kidding the sunny or something?
I know. He's just, ever since I posted the papers about him, you know, getting suspended by the state dental board and all the lawsuits, he's been very quiet.
Yep. Yep. That was really, he hasn't made a peep since then.
No. He's still, you know, he went on Yelp to really rip a doctor, which is pretty funny. How he was going to sue the doctor and get the doctor thrown out of the, you know, whatever it is, the state medical board. And I posted a reply, and all of a sudden his review disappeared.
Well, he's kind of become known for that in the last few years, these Yelp reviews that he writes. And they're always super critical. They're always mentioning that he's a nationally syndicated CBS radio host. And then they always, you know, it's always something bad that happened. And then he writes in his abbreviated print style of writing.
Yeah, I mean, I really miss when he's not posting, but I can understand it.
Oh, sorry, I clicked the wrong button there. I do have a little bit of Leno here I could play you. Hold on, let's...
Yo, what's up, what's up, what's up?
See? There you go. You put it on your answering machine. Are you, you know, obviously, I guess I should bring this up because I know several of you know him. Obviously, on behalf of everyone with the show, condolences to Dave Meltzer. Not like he's listening to this. On the passing of his father, that news came out today. I don't know if everyone heard that.
Yeah, definitely condolences, man.
Yeah, for sure.
He, I read that his father, Herbert, I believe, right?
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, he lived to be 90, so... you know, if there's any silver lining, he did live a full life. But Dave is an old friend of mine. I haven't spoken to him fairly recently, but a good dude in my opinion. And condolences if he hears this. God bless.
Yes, my condolences as well. And you have to look at someone that lives to be 90. Again, you know, Brian, you had your dad on. That's great. You know, I lost both my parents within 18 months of each other. Just a few years back. And so, you know, Dave, if you're listening, my condolences. And it's great that, you know, someone can live a good full life and live to be older. That it's just, and if your parents are still with you, you know, that's great too. But for someone that went through something within 18 months of losing a mother and a father, you know, man, all I can say is my heart goes out to you. And sadly, I can say, time doesn't heal that. Whatever people say, you just got to get through it. Every day sometimes is a struggle. You have good days and bad days with that. But my condolences to you, Dave. And I hope you do listen to this show because it's a great show. And I enjoyed the interview the other day on the Cornette Show. I thought that was very well conducted, Brian, with you and Jimmy and Dave on the show. So, you know, just keep up the good work again there, podcast lion, Brian.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Of course, a lot of people have been getting in touch about the segment with my father on the show. That surprisingly turned into an overwhelming hit. And
it was good.
Yeah, I think so, based on the reaction. But he mentioned the wrestler. Bob, did you ever hear of a wrestler named Gordo Chihuahua?
Oh, come on. That's even a dog's name.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying, come on, like, of course you knew who that was. No, apparently.
I thought that's what you were going to say, too, Bob. I thought you were going to say, of course I have. Who hasn't?
Yeah. My father, when he was naming wrestlers that he remembered seeing on New York TV when he was a kid, he named, I think, Arnold Skoland and a couple other names that people would know from, you know, Killer Kowalski. And then he just named Gordo Chihuahua. And I thought he made it up, but then.
Yeah.
A few people got in touch with me. He was an underneath guy for at least a little while in the WWWF, and I guess he was a Mexican wrestler who worked in the Southwest. So I didn't know if you had ever heard of Gordo Chihuahua.
No, and I saw some really horrible jobbers back then, too. I don't remember him. That's funny that your dad would say Skoland because, you know, they said Arnold Skoland later on. Not a lot of people got to see Skoland in action. So he was absolutely the most boring jobber ever. Yeah.
When you saw him back then, they called him Skoland?
No, Skoland, but then later they were calling him Skoland. He spelled his name with two A's.
Yeah.
But they used his work name was Skoland early on. Then they changed it, and then I think they changed it back.
My uncle in Baltimore, he told me way back when it was Skoland. He remembered Arnold Skoland. So, you know, and of course he didn't use the term jobber. He's just like back then it was a guy that got beat up all the time, but he worked for the WWF at the time. So
he was saying skull and like skull land when he would tell me, you know, about different guys when I was younger, you know. But of course, I never got to see him until years and years later. I met him, you know, when I went up there and done a few TV shows, TV tapings, job matches, what you want to call them. But that was my first introduction to him. It was because an uncle told me, you know, skulling, that's the way you say it. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But
I didn't
Bobby,
realize why he was on, except that I didn't know back then that he had part ownership in the Triple WF.
Yeah.
What were you going to say,
Bobby? After I met you through this 605 Super Podcast, greatest podcast in the world and the only podcast that mattered,
right.
I did my daily motion and YouTube searches, and I thought I actually have a thought for Bob as well before you go, if you have time. But I saw you with bleach blonde hair working Roddy Piper, and I thought he gave you, I know you talked about working with him on the taping, but I thought he gave you a lot, so he must have respected you as more than just an enhancement guy.
Well, you know, and I appreciate that, and he did. And what happened was he walked by, he saw me, I had the bleached blonde hair. I had just finished up working up in Canada, out in the Maritimes, and bless his heart, I just by recently, Ron Starr, I appreciated the interview with the gentleman who wrote the book on the Ron Starr book. But I worked up there, and a couple of my friends from Florida contacted me and said, hey, you know, if WWF comes through, man, go up there and do their TV, blah, blah, blah. They pay you good, this and that. Hey, while I was sitting there in the back, and Piper comes through and sees me, and he looks at me. And he's like, hey, kid. And at the time, I was in pretty good shape. You know, I've been working. I think I worked that first summer like 16 weeks straight, no days off, twice on Sundays. I was conditioning. You know, I would hold a little bit of a tan, the hair, et cetera. And he said, hey, kid, who you working tonight? And I said, you know, no idea. Because the board wasn't up. It's the first time I'd ever been to a WWF in a backstage area as a performer. Even though I had been to a couple shows in Florida in the back, but not as a performer, just meeting the guys because of the Malenko connection. But anyway, yeah. And he took me in the back and he said, you know, come with me if you don't care. I was like, yeah, no problem. And that's when he was doing the deal with Ric Flair. And we went in the back, and we're already in the back anyway of the Civic Center. It was about 20 minutes from my house up in West Virginia. And long story short, we went to a bathroom, and he said, you carried away here very politely, very courteous, very professional. And he said, hey, I'd like to do something with you. Do you carry away here just a minute? And I said, yeah, no problem. And I, at that point, when he was gone like 2 minutes, I thought, this is a fucking rib, man. I'm seriously, I'm thinking this is a fucking rib, you know. And probably 3 minutes later, so within a 5 minute mark, here comes Roddy Piper with Ric Flair. Ric Flair has a suit on, the whole deal. Over top, he has his robe on, actually, over top of the suit where I guess he'd been doing promos. And Roddy Piper, he just introduced each other. You know, he said, your name? I said, well, I wrestle with Bobby Blaze. My name's Bobby Smedley. And Piper said, Rick, I think we could do something with this guy. What do you think about this? And Flair, I'd done, embarrassingly, a Ric Flair impersonation. I said, woo, I'm the Nature Boy. You know, I'm a jet flying, kiss stealing, wheel and deal and stuff. And I've done my gimmick, you know, because, and Flair looked at me and he looked at me. He goes, hey, kid, that's pretty damn good. But you know, Ric Flair. He said, let me tell you one thing. And I'm just sitting there, I'm in awe. I'm like, yeah. He goes, when you do that face bump, turn your head or your nose will look like this. He pointed to his nose. And just started laughing. And I was cracked up, and he walked out of the restroom, and Piper said, so here's the deal. He goes, I want you to go out there, and I want you just to act like, you know, you're the cock of the walk. You're Ric Flair. He said, when I get as close to you as I can get, he said, I'm going to grab a chair from somewhere. And he said, spit on me. And I said, what? He said, spit on me. And I said, are you serious? He goes, I want you to spit on me. And I said, only if you want me to, you know, I'm being very respectful. I'll do what you ask. And he said, I said, anything else? He said, yeah, when I get in the ring, you call it, the Bulldogs are finished. And when he got close enough, he grabbed the chair. He said, this chair, he said, this kid thinks he's Ric Flair. Then he goes, this chair's for Flair. And as he got close enough, I spit right in his face, and he took it. And he jumped through, and I said, you know, go, turnbuckle, turnbuckle. And I did an old Terry Funk thing that I'd seen. I loved where he would do turnbuckle, 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 backdrop sell. And I came up, and by that time, you know, there was some time, and I said, Bulldog. And I sold to another corner. I took the Bulldog. Piper rolled me up, 1, 2, 3, thank you, son. And he goes, get ready to get out. And he even gave me a cue. And so, because he even gave me a cue. So when he slid out, I laid down, waiting for him to come back in. He grabbed a chair. Then I saw it. I started scooting over the top rope. He barely brushed me. I got over and out of the ring, which I'd have went 20 or 30 minutes because I had been working up in Canada for all that time and been working at that point. I'd done whatever he told me to do. And, he didn't even get me, just brushed me. I jumped over the top rope and he sits it down. He goes, this chair's for Flair. This chair's for Flair. So yeah, he gave me a hell of a lot. And, years later, I saw him when I was in WCW up in Vancouver shooting EA Sports, the Mayhem video sports motion capture, game or whatever. And he was there shooting, episode of Viper. He came up to our table. It was me, Buddy Lee Parker, Lash LaRue, and Bobby Eaton. And he came up and he said, hey guys, you know, how are you? We spoke to each other at breakfast. And it's just one of those things. Sometimes you click with someone, but, he treated me so good to be who he was, such a legend. And I don't use that word lightly. And I even mentioned it in my second book. And I'm not here promoting books. We're celebrating the Star Wars 4th of July edition, but I do mention a couple people that I use the word legend as an icon, and he's one of them, and so is Dusty Rhodes. So when I say legend, I don't use that word lightly, but Roddy Piper to me was a legend and an icon of professional wrestling. But man, talk about getting treated nice by someone. They just got it. They understood, you know, that the late Eddie Guerrero told me before and after matches, and I worked with him several times, was my dad told me, you know, if I go to the ring and I just beat you up, then I've won a match and beat no one. So he used to give me so much during our matches, even though I was, quote, a jobber or enhancement talent or a carpenter or whatever you want to call that, Eddie would give me so much and then beat me, because to him, it meant something in his mind still that he beat someone that could have beat him. And that's the way Piper was. He understood that, you know, if he just beats me up, with no reason. See, but he had that heat with Flair, and they was fighting, and you know, Flair was, you know, it's one thing. Piper had he put reason behind the madness and the madness behind the reason. And for me to have the opportunity, I take no shame in that. I've had people say, I can't believe you go on WWF TV or WWF, you know, and I'm like, motherfucker, if you knew how much, to myself, I want to say, I said, if you know what they paid me for that one night's work, you know, and not only that, what an honor it is to be up in there for a fucking living legend at the time, you know, and rest in peace, Roddy Piper. But you know, for someone like that to have that kind of respect for you and to do something with you when you're just there to put them over, make them look good, they got it. And Piper, he got it. He's like, you know, why just go in here and beat someone up? But he had enough power to plan something to say, you know, hey, this kid reminds me of Ric Flair. Come here, kid. I've got something for you. And without being redundant, tell you a story, you know. So, yeah. And Flair was all for it, you know.
Well,
so to me, I take great pride in that.
Well, I know Bob, you probably, I think you had to leave 15 minutes ago, but you're still on the line, so I'll let you.
Yeah, sorry, Bob. Is Bob still there?
Yeah, Bob's still
there. Yeah, no lawsuits, Bob. No lawsuits, please.
Well, thank you, Bobby, for commenting on that so eloquently. Yeah, I watched that, and I was like, that's my boy, man. That's like callback deal. But, Bob, I have a slight bone to pick with you, Mr. Barnett.
Oh, yeah?
I think we're Facebook friends or Twitter followers or whatever, social media. I get mixed up, but you went to, I believe, Spain.
Recently, yeah. Horrible.
But you had a picture showing you had a long layover. How long was your layover in Philadelphia?
Oh, we stayed there for 2 days.
You stayed in Philly for 2 days?
Yeah. We had to meet some people. I wanted to go to a bar I read about. And we were near the airport. We got in real late one night, and we were meeting my girlfriend's grandson there the day after we got in. We were taking him to Spain.
Despite what you might hear on the 605, I'm a pretty cool, pretty fun guy. And
I didn't know you live here.
Yeah, I'm 10 minutes away from the airport, and I was like, damn. Bob, I only thought you had like a 5-hour layover, but I wanted to put out that the Marriott, you were in Terminal A for American or something, right?
Yeah. We were right across the Marriott when we came out of the building.
And there's just like a 2-football-field walk to the Marriott where the boys used to stay, but they stay at a different place now. But it's a cool bar, and if you don't drink, you can get good food there and whatnot. But I thought it would have been fascinating if, because I was available at that point. And you didn't know. I don't really have a bone to pick with you. I just wanted to bring it up. If you ever are in that situation again,
I tell you, that's a great city. I hadn't been there for years, and we went to the art museum that morning when it was pouring, and it's a great museum. And then we went to the Reading Terminal in the afternoon. Damn, I love that place.
Yeah, Reading Terminal kicks ass. But yeah, I would have probably been having a few, but if you guys didn't partake in that, you could probably just laugh at my hijinks. But anyway, next time you come through, let me know.
Absolutely.
Well, with that, Bob, I guess we'll let you go to the pool, which I'm sure you've desperately wanted to do for the last 25 minutes or so since you've been on the line, but we'll have you on the show again real soon.
No problem. See you guys.
All right, take it easy.
All right,
pleasure, Bob. Thank you. Bye.
And I believe Bob has hung up. That usually means there's the Skype sound. He is now gone. It's probably almost time for us to start winding down. Actually, I don't know. Did Baldrin want to? I forgot if Baldrin was available. Hold on. Let me hit him up real quick.
Did Scott ever say anything more?
Scott's there. Scott.
Hello. Can you hear me?
No. Nope.
Yes. Scott's
you
back.
Have anything else to say? Come on, Scott.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
There seems to be a gap. I think Brian's got me on a 7-second delay. He's afraid I'm going to mention Vince Russo or something, so he's he put the delay on me. Well, I don't have a Ric Flair story to compare to that, but last Sunday I was sitting here at helping out over at my mother's house and was on Facebook, and there Ric Flair was making a personal appearance at a hefty price over in my hometown, New Hartford. And I went on Facebook, answered a quick trivia question, and they gifted me with 2 free tickets to meet and greet and get autographs and pictures with Flair.
You know what? Keep where you're at. But I knew the night, like maybe 2 nights before, you thanked Barry Rose maybe for telling you about how some of the conventions work or whatever, and you were probably negative towards going, but the free tickets.
Yeah, that made a lot of difference. We went right over there, and I got to say, for those events can really be a pain, like the way Barry Rose described. This was as well, nobody wants to hear this, but this was as well run of that type of a meet and greet autograph event. He seemed to be in a great mood. I'm sure he was handsomely compensated because he was signing everything that they put in the. It was unbelievable, but he was real nice, very funny to different people. The audience or the crowd that showed up there to meet him was pretty respectful. There were a couple of yahoos, but he played along.
Give him a half hour, but keep going.
No, in fact, we had really were pressed for time, so we went over there, got to meet him and picture and all that, and that was very cool. And he was real nice and very funny. And he was supposed to do a Q&A after that, which I would have loved to have seen that. Apparently he was treated well and was on his best behavior, as far as I know.
Yeah, great picture. I mean, despite my recent experiences with him, the guy was my idol when I used to go to the Civic Center in 1989 and what have you. And, I'll always respect his work and everything. So great picture, man.
Life has taken some unfortunate turns in recent years, and it does always bug me when I hear, I would tell you if he was a pain in the ass or something, but he was very nice. And, it's just that people hear these stories and it forms an opinion of somebody they don't really know. They go on here and say, oh, I lost all respect for him when I heard what he did to Tom Robinson.
Yeah.
Gotta be kidding me.
He bought me six beers. That's the way I look at the positive.
Yeah.
or I should say six drinks. Because he was red wine and Miller Lite is his current beer of choice. It was a year ago at least, but
yeah. Well, I didn't drink any Miller Lite. That's my beer of choice as well, and I've seen him put down plenty of Miller Lite. And I worked in WCW with him for 3 years, and those were some struggling years for him. Apparently, once I went back and read his book. But the entire time I was there, very respectful, always professional, always courteous to everyone. And one night, I'm getting back to where I'm going with something you mentioned earlier about Dean Malenko and Brad Armstrong. One day in Orlando, Flair, the very last taping of the Universal at the Universal Studios, Flair wrestled Brad Armstrong in about a 10-minute match for the worldwide taping, which, you can mail that shit in sometimes. Especially if you're Ric Flair, not me, of course. I had to go out there and work my ass off. And luckily, Terry Taylor and Arn and guys like Kevin Sullivan, really took care of me in the worldwide tapings. But, Flair, a guy like that could mail it in. So could Brad. But Brad Armstrong, one of the most wittiest and funniest and humorous and kindest, loving people outside the ring. Flair and Brad tore the fucking deal. I had those paid customers already at Universal anyway. They put them on a little trolley and dropped them off. Here's your place you can stay for an hour in air conditioning. And it was me and the Armstrongs, Dean Malenko, Jericho, Eddie Guerrero, just about probably 10 people at the most still there because it was last taping of the last day after a 10-day run in Florida. And I kid you not, Flair and Brad went out there and tore it fucking down. Didn't have to, but they did. And when they walked back in, myself, Scotty, Steve, Armstrong, Dean Malenko, Chris Jericho, again, Eddie, probably that same group, maybe Benoit even. We stood up and we fucking clapped for them as they come through the curtain. I mean, we marked out because that's the kind of stuff you could have mailed in. You got a paid audience there. They're already in there just getting out of air conditioning. You've been there for 10 fucking days doing your taping. Plus, you have to do Orlando and Tampa. You have to do Jacksonville and Miami, and you have to travel, so it's not just there every day. You're working, you have a couple of live nitros during that time, a couple of thunders during that time. But anyway, my point is, Flair come in and shook each of our hands and said, thank you, because we stood and clapped for him. And that goes back to the other thing about Dean Malenko. If you ever get a chance, let me just tell you, Dean's personality outside the ring, I wrote about it. I'm not here promoting books. So I don't give a fuck, but it's there if you don't believe me.
Pin me, pay me.
I'm just saying. Thank you, Tom. Anyway, Dean is one of the fucking most quick-witted, smartest, humorous people you could ever be around. He could just say stuff, and him and Brad were two of the quickest-witted, smoothest operating if their character, if they could have portrayed that on TV, if someone would have let them or said, you've got them be your fucking self, and Dean, don't be the Iceman, or Brad, just act like you haven't, you know, put everyone over for 15 years. Go out there and just be you. Them guys, you just wouldn't believe how fucking personable and funny and humorous and loving and caring they were. But above all, they just loved this business. But anyway, so not to knock any Flair stories, not to out-proportion any Brad or Dean stories or whatever. Now I'm talking around Sarko or whatever. I'm just saying, basically, Flair, you know, always, even I guess during those times were dark times for him working for Bischoff. You know, you listen to the old podcast, you read his book or whatever, and the Herd stories and all this, and then of course he jumps and comes back. But and Tom, at least you got six fucking drinks out of the guy. But you know,
oh yeah, and they were expensive in a hotel bar.
Exactly. There you go. But, you know, he is the Nature Boy. He is Ric Flair. And you can't discredit, you know, what he's done in the business. And I'm glad that you know, he gets to do all these personal appearances. I know they're not cheap, but I'm glad that you had a good experience with him there. Instead of going and having a bad experience, because that, to me, that's what it should be. When you see one of these guys, when you pay, you won your tickets, you said, but when you pay and you stand in line, you see these guys, of course, I'm not going to do that ever. But for you to get to go over there and do that, that's awesome, man. I'm glad he was in a good mood. I'm glad he answered the questions, and it was just had a great time. That's what it should always be about for the fans of the business, is getting back to the business that's been so good to you. And believe me, that business has been so good to Ric Flair. And I know he's given 1,000 times more than I have to the business. Even though I gave my 100%, you know, that's the thing. You've got to give back to these fans. And like I told people when I go to the shows I go to, people say, how much to sign this? I never charge for a fucking autograph. I'll never charge for an autograph. If you have something you want me to sign, I will. If you want to buy a picture, a DVD, or a T-shirt, that's great. But I'll never charge. And some of these guys charge for their autographs. I understand it. You know, they're the Ric Flairs, they're the Pete Roses, and that's how they make their living, and that's what they do or whatever. But at least you had a good experience. Plus, you had free fucking tickets for answering trivia questions you obviously knew the answers to.
Yeah. Well, fucking Scott Cornish is the ultimate babyface, too. Like, he's witty, he's funny, and he's subtle. Like, yep. A friend of mine called Tiarnak.
Mm.
You guys there?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You guys with me?
Nope.
A friend of mine, Tiarnak, the Mystic Sage, sometimes has a psychic feeling about other people's questions and answers. And, you know, I just want to say people contribute, maybe. And like, I come up all tatted up and, you know, I just found out fat because I was so blown up the other day. But Scott comes up well-dressed, well-spoken. I mean, who's going to heal him?
Well, I took a page out of his book. I bought a platter of kamikazes and stuffed somebody else with the bill.
Well, guys, I do need
right you are.
I do need to start winding down Star Wars. Let me first start by saying Miller Lite sucks. I wouldn't drink Miller Lite if you fucking paid me. I'd rather have a High Life than a Miller Lite.
I'll take a PBR.
PBR's garbage.
The best kind of fucking beer is this, guys. Get it in your head early and get it in your head now. The best kind of beer is free beer.
Dick Murdoch.
There you go.
Well,
is there any chance, Brian, I know you're winding down, that you'll speak about that topic of beer that you told me earlier when we were doing the other segment, or is that off limits?
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. But first, Bobby, I think we've eaten up enough of your Sunday. And by the way, I guess we just broke kayfabe about what day we're doing this. I think we've eaten enough.
I didn't. You did. I saw it's like the 4th of July, Jack.
Well, we're going to let you go in case you want to rip out your teeth or anything else today. But any closing words you want to say to the listeners?
You know, it seems like just yesterday, but it was 1976 and we was celebrating our bicentennial of this great country. Actually, it was 41 years ago. 1976, we were celebrating the bicentennial of this great country. So to all of our good friends around the United States and around the world, enjoy a hot dog, enjoy some apple pie, and enjoy a cold beer of your choice. It doesn't matter as long as it's free. And have a happy, happy 4th of July. Be safe. Thank you. Pin me, pay me. Guys, it's been my pleasure. And all the fans of 605, just keep on supporting this great podcast because it's the only podcast that matters. And if you don't believe that, listen once and you'll realize this. For everyone else, fuck those guys. This is the podcast that matters.
There we go. Thank you, Bobby. Have a happy 4th. Season's greetings. We'll talk to you again soon.
Season's fucking greetings.
Well, there goes Bobby Blaze, and now we're going to begin wrapping things up. I do want to add someone else for a couple minutes here because I told them I would. But you asked about the beer story, Tom. What happened was Suzanne texted me earlier and said, what kind of beers do you like? And I said, oh, you know, like Bud Light, Coors Light, Stella, Corona. And she said, okay, because John is coming over. John is the boyfriend of one of Suzanne's friends. And I have a cough drop in my mouth. Let me take this out. This is hitting my teeth. She said, John's coming over, and he wants to buy you beer. I said, oh, okay, tell him Stella, because it's more expensive than the other ones I listed. But yes, a silly little stupid story. But let me quickly add Bowdger in here, and then we'll begin to wrap things up. Boom. Boom. And it is ringing. Were you on with him last time, Tom?
With Jeff?
Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah, absolutely. At least one of the Star Wars.
No, honey. No, honey. It must be 2 o'clock because this is Brian calling, so it must be 2. Hello?
Hey, Jeff. How's it going?
It must be 2 o'clock.
Hi, stupid.
What's going on?
How you doing, man? Sorry we got delayed, and the show got delayed and delayed and delayed. But here we are.
One thing that everyone listening should know about the great Brian Last is he is nothing if not timely.
That's right.
Hi, Jeff. This is Tom R. T.R. Shock. That's what I'm going by the rest of my life now. No more Tom Robinson.
You've given that up, huh?
I'm just trying to get a good job like you.
Well, I'm just trying to retire from my good job. I got 3.5 years left.
Wow, you old fuck.
Yeah, that's me.
No, you can get out if you put 20. Did you put 25 years in to get early out, or is it just the age thing?
No, I got 31 and a half in, and I'm in the Florida's got what they call a drop program where you put in 5 years and they match your income. And so, you know, I hope to retire a millionaire. Sorry, that was a little bit funny.
Nice. Actually, Jeff, like, Brian's sick, and he just wanted to get you on, like, for a couple minutes. And I'm such a dork,
I ask you. He used me? He just used me? What, is he one of my ex-wives?
No, he actually, no.
Hold on. Stop, Tom. Howard Baum is going to be on this week's show. And that was posted on the page. And Jeff made some kind of comment about, I don't remember exactly how you put it, ask Howard about my second wedding or something. Well, what is the story?
Well, the story is that noted photographer to the stars, Howard Baum, was in fact the photographer for my second wedding. And what happened was, you know, we made an arrangement with Howard where he was going to just basically shoot the wedding and give us the film. And somehow he gave us 3 rolls of film, but the second roll of film, for some reason, there were no pictures on it.
So, yeah, my ex-wife wasn't real happy with Howard Baum that day, needless to say.
What happened?
Maybe Tommy Rich and Eddie Gilbert, like, fought in between them at that point when you were, you know, pushing cake in each other's face.
It could be. I don't know.
That's an obscure reference. I got nothing from Brian.
Well, it's not that obscure because we just talked about it on the show that's coming out in the next couple days.
F you all.
Obscure reference. It's one of the biggest angles in Memphis in the 80s.
Not for regular people. It's just for us dorks.
Us dorks is the entirety of our audience.
True. Hey, I love them.
Real quick, I know you guys have probably mentioned it already, but if you haven't, I just want to send my condolences to Dave Meltzer. I read earlier today that his father passed, and Godspeed to his dad.
We did mention it. Of course, you were really good friends with him, so I'm glad to have you on. Did you ever get to talk to his dad, or did you ever meet his dad?
Never did. Actually, Dave was actually at that ill-fated second marriage we just discussed. He was one of my groomsmen, and he made the return to South Florida, but his dad I did not meet.
I've spoken to his mom. When there was an issue once, I guess I accidentally typed in the wrong credit card number. I was off by
this
one.
This sounds
number.
Funny.
And Dave's mom called. I see my phone. I see the caller ID, and it says Meltzer. I was like, oh, shit. Dave Meltzer's calling me. And I pick up the phone, and she actually said, hi, this is Dave Meltzer's mother. And I'm like, what? Okay. And she goes, you just paid for your renewal, but your credit card number was wrong. And I said, okay, can you read it back to me? And I realized it was off by one number. I made like a mistake, like a zero was a two or something. And I gave her the number, and then she said, okay, thank you, goodbye. And I was like, okay.
Did you actually do that just hoping you'd get a phone call from Dave Meltzer?
No. I mean, first of all, I didn't know that his mom handled the credit card transactions. That was news to me. But no, that was I talked to Dave's mom before I talked to Dave.
But see, what you don't want to do is you don't want to get on the bad side of Dave's mom. That's for sure.
Yeah. One number off, Mrs. Spencer, Mrs. Meltzer. What's going on here?
Any other wrestling luminaries that were your groomsmen?
Tom Nash, maybe?
Actually, Pete Lederberg shot my third wedding because I didn't learn my lesson, but I didn't have any problems with him.
Jeff, I'm a little fat now, but I'm reasonably handsome, and I have a 20, almost 21-year-old daughter and a long relationship. Obviously, I'm a creep if you read what I write, but how the hell do you get three women to love you enough to walk the aisle with you?
That's what I tell everyone is, no matter what you think of me, I've talked three women into marrying me,
That's pretty cool.
So
I think.
And I
as long as you don't have to pay for alimony. Everyone hated wrestling?
No, everyone but this one.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And you seemingly get along with them because I've seen you post things on Facebook like, oh, yeah, I ran into my my second wife. And then it's like a picture of you and them. And I'm like, he's taking pictures with his exes and putting it on Facebook.
Doesn't that happen to everyone?
Well,
let's put it this way. The second my second wife, I'm on relatively good terms with. The first wife, I refer to as she who shall not be named.
it's like a player that got traded at the deadline in the NBA. She will be named later.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, if we have no contact with number one for the rest of my life, it will be too soon.
Scott Cornish is also on the line. I don't think he said anything since you've been on the line, Jeff.
Does he then have an ex-wife?
No, I don't. Somebody have to introduce me to one.
Oh, it appears he got cut off there. Scott, you there?
There. Can you hear me at all?
A little bit, yeah. I mean,
hello?
It's
I can now.
It sounds more and more like your phone is underwater.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what happened. Now I'm just sitting here in the same place. Any better?
It really in general sucks, but hang on. You can listen in to what we're talking about here.
Having having no ex-wife, Scott, you are probably at least six figures richer.
Six figures, definitely. That's the decimal point that fucks me every time.
Hey, Jeff, did you watch New Japan last night?
I absolutely did.
What'd you think of Elgin versus Omega?
I thought it was a good show, not a great show.
He didn't hear you, Brian. Let me rephrase that question.
Yeah.
What was the best match?
Holy shit, was Omega a babyface on that card or what?
Yeah, to those fans, big time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the two questions that I have coming out of that show is, number one, why did they think that Cody Rhodes was going to be a draw for New Japan fans? And number two, why is Billy Gunn challenging Tanahashi?
Yeah, the Billy Gunn.
Because of two stories I told earlier about Kurt Hennig. But anyway, go ahead, bro.
No, the Billy Gunn thing makes absolutely no sense. It's just, it's ludicrous.
Well,
it would be like, you know, the WWF running, you know, All Japan's biggest arena and using Ryuma Go. It makes no sense whatsoever. And then when it comes to Cody Rhodes, I just don't get it. I don't get. What are we gonna? I'm
merchandise
sorry. I don't know what's going on with Scott's phone. And then with Cody Rhodes, I just don't get it. I think he's kind of on like this indie cred tour where he's trying to get indie cred, but I don't buy him. I don't think he's that level.
No, I mean, there's no question. If you have Cody Rhodes on an indie show, he's a big name. He's going to give you a good match. But for New Japan, he's kind of like, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, no, and he couldn't hang with Okada last night, I didn't think. Plus, his promos are weak. When they keep showing that thing over and over again of him, like, storming the press conference, and he just has that fake WWE manner of talking.
I guess it was you that posted that, and I think you hit the nail right on the head. He came off like a WWF character on a New Japan show, and it just, like, didn't work for me.
Hey, here's the worst
line.
Here's the worst line. New Japan, more like Old Japan.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, shut
wow.
up.
Shut up. That's shut something up. I would say.
Shut up and move over so he can stare at your wife.
You know what sucks though is that before
no,
I think it, I oh hey oh she's beautiful but before, I believe, when Dusty was inducted, maybe I'm wrong. My timelines are all screwed up, but he spoke and he came across as like one of the best possible promo guys for the future. And now that he's free without a script, like I got a bad copy, but I watched when he I didn't watch the match, but I watched when he won the ROH title. And, like, I couldn't – it wasn't a promo I could pop for. It was just, like, their crowd was, like, fuck the Revival or something. And, like, what's that have to do with him winning his first world title or whatever?
I don't know, but they're much better than he is. And the other thing is, you know, in terms of Cody Rhodes, he's not allowed to use the name Rhodes. And of all the names to get the share treatment and just be a singular name, Cody doesn't work.
Cody.
Here is Cody.
It's like Corky Rhodes had went to the Independent.
You know, and how much does it affect ROH's credibility that you have a mid-card guy from the WWE come in and right away win your heavyweight championship?
I completely agree with you on that. I thought it was asinine that they put the title on him.
To me, it certainly devalues Christopher Daniels, that's for sure.
I agree with that. I'm still in the middle with Cody, but the Drew Galloway, McIntyre, whatever his name is, I think that guy went out like he was the chosen one or whatever because he had that WWE at the time look and whatever they were looking for. And, you know, he got in a bad deal and he left or they cut him or whatever. But he worked his ass off. And I enjoyed him. Like, he was pushing everybody to watch him. And I was like, this dude's pretty good and he can talk. And now he's back. But I said I'm in the middle about Cody, but I think Jack Swagger is out there now. And I've only seen him. I think he worked with Mike, right?
He did or he's about to. Yeah.
And like off the record, because of this, or on the record, but this is not factual, but I heard he believed he was worth $4,000 for an independent show. And he's just, I don't know. Which guy are you talking about now?
I put Jack Swagger in the spot of Ring of Honor champion before I put Cody.
I wouldn't, because of, well, now I'm being contradictory, but I was going to say I wouldn't because he can't talk, but then earlier I made a point that Cody can't talk now either. So
it's funny, WWE's letting all the guys with lisps go. Cody, Swagger, who's next?
Well, what I want to know is how many people decided to watch that show last night that maybe didn't ordinarily watch New Japan because they went, "Ooh, wow, Cody and Billy Gunn are on the show. I'll watch it for sure now."
Yeah, no one. It's like when AAA ran the When Worlds Collide pay-per-view, and I know it was Ron Skolger's idea and Ron's my friend, but when all of a sudden he had like Tito Santana on the show, who had never worked for AAA, never worked a Lucha show, and it's like, well, you know, old fans at WWF will see him on the show and want to, you know, it's the same thing with Billy Gunn. Of all the guys to get to work with New Japan for these shows, their initial foray into America, Billy Gunn, really?
I'll tell you something that I think it was Josh Barnett that said. I mean, the guy for his age, there's no doubt he's in tremendous shape, but he shouldn't be on the top of that card, anywhere near the top of the card, you know?
No, and he's in tremendous shape. He got fired as a WWE trainer because even though he wasn't being tested, he failed a drug test for like a 50 and over bodybuilding show.
Or powerlifting, maybe.
Yeah, whatever it was. And then they fired him. So I don't know. It's just, it's so stupid. And the other thing is, I hated the commentary last night.
See, you know, I didn't see.
You know, the one thing that struck me is I wasn't sitting there watching. I mean, I did catch Jim Ross missing a few spots and missing a few things. It wasn't like I sat there and went, oh, my God, this is completely ruining the show for me. But I noticed it. But afterwards, I felt like, you know what this reminded me of? This reminded me was in, like, the late 80s when Gordon Solie showed up on WCW in 1990-91, and you kind of realized that the guy that was the best of all time had kind of lost a step and wasn't there anymore. And I think that's what I noticed about Jim Ross. As good as he is, he's lost a step and shouldn't be there anymore.
He doesn't need to call the moves, but to me, it's about the pacing and the excitement. You know, Jim Ross's big thing was he was able to feign enthusiasm all the time and make it seem like a sporting event and really get into it. And he's now just slow. There's lots of dead air. He's waiting for things. He's like almost breaking kayfabe in the commentary. Like, oh, he's the best in the business. Now listen to my podcast. You know, just like things like that. And then,
has he actually dropped the podcast on commentary?
Yeah, he did it last night. He told people to listen to Kenny Omega on his podcast.
Wow.
You know, oh, he's such an interesting guy. So you're telling people to watching a kayfabe show, you know, to listen to a non-kayfabe interview on your shitty podcast. It's silly. And again, it's just he can't match the enthusiasm that product needs. I wrote on Twitter last night, I'm like, they should do a talent search. And there are good commentators out there, so maybe one of them, or maybe it's someone no one knows. Find someone.
I think the three of us are available.
Well, I'm not. I wouldn't want to do it. But find someone who's enthusiastic for the product and can have the same pace as the product. Mauro Ranallo was perfect, and unfortunately he's off the table. You have to find someone like that, with that kind of enthusiasm.
Well, I have a question that I don't know the answer to. What's the deal with Ross going back to WWE? Is he going to still be able to do the New Japan shows or what?
I think till the end of the year, right?
Yeah, I think until the end of the year. I think so.
So obviously they're going to have to find somebody.
Yeah, And I hope it's not Kevin Kelly either, because I don't think he's the answer.
You know, I hate to be the voice of reason because obviously, you know my history, but I hesitate to comment on Jim Ross's negatives just because of what happened. And I don't know, but I didn't see his commentary last night. And he is over 60, but what you said, Jeff, about Gordon and even my favorite announcer of all time, Lance Russell, went to WCW, and he couldn't be really the Lance Russell of Memphis. So, I don't know. I'm gonna fade back, but on JR. But I did hear his podcast with Jimmy Cornette, who one of us knows very well, and the other two of us know well. And he did mention that one of us on the line, kind of sarcastically.
Yeah, I'm in his head a little bit. I can tell you that for a fact, because I've heard it from a third party, that I'm in Jim Ross's head a little bit. And you know what? If he plays his card right, I'll be in his head a little more. Because I'm not going to put up with any shit from anybody. and actually, Jeff, your analogy, I think, is a tad off. It isn't Gordon going back to the NWA WCW in 89. It's when Gordon started doing the New Japan syndicated shows.
Yes.
You know, in
the
mid-90s.
That was completely horrifying because everybody was Mr. Fujinami versus, you know, Mr. Choshu. Nobody had a first name when Gordon called the match in New Japan.
Yeah, it was just like when all the Japanese wrestlers tore around. It really points it out. Why was Mr. Fuji Mr.? You know, why?
Well, he had a paper trail because he called Roddy Rod Piper.
I'm here with Rod Piper.
He was so drunk all the time that I don't know if I can fault Gordon for, like, he's got a list of Japanese names and he's like, fuck it, Mr. Tenru.
Well,
where's my scotch?
Before we wrap things up, anything else you want to talk about real quick, Jeff? That's promising.
Just got done bring up your minutes. Book. Bring up your book, or actually tell me. Actually, I'm going to hijack you for a minute, Brian. Tell me real quick.
That's so unlike you.
Yeah, of course. I'm such a quiet guy. Tell me about the most awesome thing you did, which I don't think I reached out and showed you props. Having Jody Hamilton put this show over. Jeff, I got to give you love, man, because, like, groups I was in and – like that, you have to really the boys have to understand, no matter what age, that you're really cool and you're a good dude and you're not just some idiot saying, do a promo for me. But you had Jody Hamilton say something about 605. So tell me how that occurred.
Well, actually, you know, I had wanted to spend more time with him other than the Q&A session. And I'll tell you, one of the things I don't know if a lot of people know about is before we started the Q&A session, there was like about a half an hour downtime before it started. And I look over and Jody Hamilton sitting by himself at this table. And I'm like, this is the guy that basically got me interested in wrestling, essentially, him and Bobby Shane. So let me go, and I had a chance for about 20 to 25 minutes to sit there and just talk to the guy, just the two of us. I said, tell me about what it was like to work Madison Square Garden when you're 19 years – he's 19 years old working Madison Square Garden. How friggin' incredible is that, you know?
Awesome.
And he had he wasn't a guy that had worked some circuits, you know, when he was 15 or something like that. He had worked in St. Joe, Missouri, and then he gets called to Madison Square Garden. That's a bit of a culture shock, you think?
Yeah, it's like
by
being
the way,
on,
I said that I thought,
I have an analogy, Brian.
Hold on. It's I said like that I on, thought he was the youngest main eventer in MSG. He may still be, but there is someone who may be younger. Off the top of my head, I don't remember. The Tonga
Kid.
Maybe
the Tonga Kid.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. But go ahead, Tom.
Him jumping to MSG from his humble beginnings reminds me, like, it's kind of like being on Talk as Jericho and then jumping right to the 605 Super Podcast.
Boom.
See, I'm starting a shot fired. Shot fired without backup? Are you guys there?
You're
on your own.
Yeah, you're on your own. No, I don't even know. What did you say? Say it again.
I said it's like he was 19 in St. Joe, Missouri. Is that what the exact place?
Yes.
That's like being a guest on Talk is Jericho. And then the next night jumping up, a.k.a. MSG.
Oh, fuck
to the
yeah.
605 Super Podcast.
Yeah.
So you're saying Jericho is St. Joe, Missouri, and the 605 is Madison Square Garden.
Thank you for explaining my complicated
just for
point.
Those of us who don't easily understand.
Yeah, there was more silence.
Take TR Shock as a second language.
All right, guys. Well, listen, it is about time to wrap things up. I don't know exactly how long we've gone, but we've gone a while. My goal is to not edit this because I have five other shows to edit in the next couple days, and I'm losing my voice again. So I'm going to try to do this as smoothly as possible and keep my voice from going completely haywire. I want to thank everyone who was on the show today. Michael Elgin, Bobby Blaze, Bob Barnett, Scott Cornish, who I think is still there somewhere underwater. Scott, you there?
Fuck you guys.
Scott Cornish. Tom
I didn't
Robinson,
know you were still there, but go ahead.
And, of course, Jeff Baldrin. And that's it for another Star Wars. What were you going to say, Scott?
Hey, Mike, you had a great match last night against Omega.
Oh, I thought Scott was saying something. I guess not.
I can't tell whether I'm here or not. I can hear you guys. I can't hear my neighbor just drove his fucking lawnmower past this thing for 20 minutes. I thought Brian was going to cut my head off for that. I had so much material, but it'll have to wait for another time.
I just have to ask one question.
Labor Day, perhaps.
I keep cock blocking. I have one question, Scott. Did Brian ever hit you up in this episode with "You're killing me"?
He may have done that in a private message. Not on.
Right on.
You fuck son of a bitch, you. I hope you die in the next 30 minutes, you motherfucking bastard, you.
It's actually verbatim what I texted to him.
Bobby Blaze told a great Ric Flair story, and about 2 minutes in, he said, long story short, and then I left for about half an hour.
Well, like I said, thank you for everyone for participating. This is, of all the Star Wars we've done, I think this is the biggest train wreck of all the Star Wars we've done, but hopefully everyone enjoys it. Someone else just jumped in, and I don't even know who.
It wasn't me, but go ahead, Jeff.
Well, if this is a train wreck, I guess that means I was the caboose because I was the last guest. I need main event status.
Next
you
time.
You saved the show, Jeff. You saved the show.
Well, like I said, thank you to everyone for participating. Hopefully you guys like it. New episodes should be up actually within a day of this, one way or the other. But until next time, let's try to do this with my voice leaving me. Tally-ho!
Wait, let me say.
Wait, didn't you mention tinyurl.com?